morning, everybody. Matt Pabala here on 720 WGN, and apparently what's left of my voice, I'm losing.
What happened?
I heard you with Patty. One of two things. Yeah. Either I'm getting a cold or I'm hitting puberty at the age of 47. I'm not quite sure which one's happening.
I think it's the cold. What did you do? Did you walk outside in this beautiful weather without a jacket?
Cold is causing some puberty? Is that what you're saying?
No.
A little turtling going on?
No, you've got a
I don't know, I just
raspy voice.
I do have a raspy voice.
Or it could be the dry air.
I swear I didn't have it earlier today. I don't know what happened. I had a client meeting, so I've been downtown all day.
Yeah.
Ended up staying at Black Dog and napping on the couch. And I got a good nap in. I feel good.
Was a window open?
No. Although, you know what? I did have to go. Jim and I had to go do a Facebook Live for a veterinary company earlier this week in St. Louis.
Ooh.
And so they were being a little tight with the dollars. They didn't want to pay for the travel. So I said, fine, we'll drive. 5-hour drive. So we went down on Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm.
And we get down to St. Louis and in the area, and we're stopping to get gas. And I get out of the car expecting to be like frozen.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait a minute. It was 42 degrees down there. I took my jacket off. I'm walking around like, This is amazing.
Yeah.
But you know what? So we get in the hotel. It's like 11 o'clock at night. We're just heading to bed and then getting up early in the morning.
Right.
It's a little warm in the room.
So you turned the air on?
I did not. You know, I just stayed for a whole week in Vegas just a week ago, right?
That's true.
And I can never, honest to goodness, no matter what hotel I'm in, I can never get that happy medium with the temperature.
Oh, I know what you mean.
It's too hot. You turn on the thing and then it's blowing forever and now you're freezing.
Yep.
And then you turn it the other way and then it gets 110 degrees.
Yep.
I just can't get it right.
Yeah.
And so I walk in this room and it's a little bit warm, but it's not crazy warm. So I don't want it to get cold. And I'm like, I just spent a week dealing with this. I don't want to turn this thing on. I thought, but you know, it's kind of warm outside. I cracked the window open.
Oh,
I slept with the window open.
That's what you did.
No, it was 3 days ago.
It doesn't
matter.
It was
Wednesday.
Well, now it's coming up.
It takes time to fester.
Does
not.
It festers in your throat.
You just like saying fester. I see what's going on here.
Uncle Fester.
Was that from Adam's Family or from the other one?
It was Adam's Family.
And what was the other one? Not the Munsters.
Yeah, the Munsters.
No, there wasn't there something besides Adam's Family?
It was
kind of a spooky show.
No, it was the Munsters and the Adam's Family.
That's it.
That was it.
Okay. I'll believe you. 773 text, 3 more weeks of winter. We need more snow. You are drunk, 773. Just go to sleep. Don't even stay up for this, because I will not put up a text like that tonight. We do not need any more snow. It's not necessary. It's not needed.
No.
Oh, let me turn on Jess's mic here. Go ahead, Ms. Jessica.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
So I was speaking with Wally, our world
traveler Wally, who we haven't talked to in like months. Is he okay?
He says, this is a special message for you.
Oh.
He says that, tell Matt it is always hard to get the temperature right in a hotel room.
He would know.
And it sounds like your voice is going to give out soon.
Yeah, it's not a good feel here.
And his birthday is on Thursday.
Wally's
going
to
Disneyland.
Oh. See, if I were Wally.
We should go to Disneyland.
Go to Wally World.
The only thing I'd want for my birthday is like my own bed. He literally spends like 40 weeks a year on the road, right? I mean, that's probably pretty legitimate accurate.
Maybe.
Why isn't he called lately? What's going on? Do we know?
He's going to Anaheim on Monday. And then...
So maybe he just hasn't been anywhere exciting?
He just got home from Seattle. He's tired.
Yeah, I can understand. That gentleman travels a lot. It's good to hear from you, Wally. Thank you for checking in. Happy birthday early. And then next time you're overseas, call us. Because we haven't talked in a while. 773 says it's snowing here on the northwest side. It's snowing right now, Roger.
I know. I said that.
Oh, God.
In the weather, I...
Well, I wasn't listening to that.
Well, duh.
I just can't handle it anymore. I can't.
I know.
I'm just wiped out.
I'm worried about you.
That's why we need to plan our vacation soon, our Matt Bubala show vacation.
Where are we going to broadcast from?
Somewhere warm.
Mexico.
Mexico. I think me and Roger need to get passports first.
You don't have a passport?
No.
Oh, you got to get a passport.
I got one.
You should have a passport so on a moment's notice you can just go.
Yeah.
Seriously.
I wonder if I got to renew. How long are they good for?
It should be 10 years. 5 years for kids.
I may have to renew mine.
Better get on that, people. And when you do it, and this is advice to all of the people out there in Radio Land.
Yes.
When you get your passport, make sure you sign up and pay the money for global entry.
What does that mean?
So you can buy through the TSA, TSA PreCheck now, right?
Yeah.
I forget what that's called, but I bought global entry. It's $100 for 5 years. Now, this makes you have TSA PreCheck. You have to you apply online, and then you have to go in for an in-person interview. It takes like 10 minutes. But there's all sorts of offices around the city or at O'Hare. You go in for a quick little meeting. They do a background check. They take your fingerprints. So you're kind of, if you're Mr. I want my privacy, then you might not want this. But you're giving them your fingerprints. You're going through a little interview about who you are, where you've lived, whatever. They're making sure you're not a terrorist, right? And from then on, you have a known flyer number. And when you're buying your, so like at United.com, I never put anything in. It's all in my saved information when I have to book our flights. And now we always go through TSA PreCheck, which means you're, you know, skipping those really long lines. I'm not taking my shoes off, not taking my belt off, all the benefits that come with that. Now, sometimes the TSA PreCheck lines are long, too, but they're generally never as long as the, you know, the general line. With the global entry, which you can also have as part of it, if you go out of country to Mexico, Canada, wherever, when you're coming back in, so at Terminal 5 at O'Hare, the international terminal, and then you have to get in the long line for re-entry with, God, who is it? Who is it that lets us back in? Who would that be, Raj?
Customs.
Customs, thank you.
Okay.
You're going through customs. You can just go up to a little kiosk and, like, put your fingerprint on it, put your handprint, do a retinal scan, whatever, and then you get through a lot quicker.
Well, then I'm set.
So that one's only great if you're coming back from out of the country, but the TSA PreCheck, I mean, Jim and I always say whenever we travel, it's $100 for 5 years. By far, the best money I've probably ever spent on anything in my life because of the time it saved us.
But do you travel out of the country often?
Not often enough.
Out of the country?
No, not often enough. But the TSA PreCheck alone was worth $100. But on board, some people just get the TSA PreCheck. I think that's still like $100, or maybe it's $85 for 5 years. I'm not sure. For an extra $10, $15, even if it's just on your honeymoon, one time you go, you get that extra little, you know, speed up on the, because when you come back through customs, if a bunch of planes came in sometimes, that could look like thousands of people waiting to get through. I've waited in customs lines for an hour at O'Hare to get back in the country.
Yeah, when we came back in from London, O'Hare was crowded trying to get back in.
Yeah, it can be rough.
We got through. I mean, I picked a good line, but it was jammed up. There was a lot of people coming.
Yeah. So people are calling with their, or texting us their ideas for how I can clear up my throat. Streamwood Steve says, try some hot tea and whiskey.
Do we have, we got to have whiskey around here somewhere.
I'm sure we do have whiskey around here somewhere. I don't know whose drawer that would be in. Maybe at the,
in the
Carnablo
fridge,
wagon.
Yeah.
I don't think in the fridge, Jess.
No.
I think that Steph, when she went on her rant and sent out those emails, she took all the whiskey as well. And then Nancy of Beach Park says, raspy throat, Lay's or Jay's potato chips and crushed ice soothes and reduces raspy voice fast.
Jay's salt, potato gargle chips. With salt. They tell you when your throat is rough, gargle with salt, warm
really?
Water and salt. So okay. There's the salt from the chips and then the cold ice kind of cool things down a
well,
little bit.
Well, let's get extra salt on the pizza, Jess. And I'll gargle with pizza.
I already ordered the pizza.
Okay, well, call him back and tell
me. I think there's enough salt on the pizza.
A long time ago. Maybe. It should be here very soon. So, are you excited?
I'm very excited. Now, in my defense, Raj.
Well, I was fine with it when you told me earlier.
I know, but now I feel like I always got to explain myself. Because your mother hen yelling at us not to have
yes,
the pizza.
I am.
What does your mother think of our pizza adventure?
My mom?
Yeah.
My mom has never texted about the pizza. My mom usually texts when she wants to call me out on something.
No.
Hi, Mom. I love you. I hope you're listening. She'll like right now she texts, oh, well, I'm glad to be listening because now I know you're alive. You know.
Jeez.
A little bit of a guilt text.
Yeah, a little bit.
But that's okay.
Yeah.
But
yeah, so earlier today you told me you were going to get some and you justified it.
I did.
I was fine with it.
Because I had a late client lunch, which was my dinner. So that was like at 3 o'clock. So I haven't eaten since 3 o'clock or so.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's okay. This is dinner.
Yeah.
312 asks, who delivers pizza at 1:30 a.m.? It's Papanino's. right?
They go till what, 4 or 5?
Some crazy. We've ordered very late at night.
Yeah.
Very late at night.
And it's not bad. It's pretty good.
And somebody else texted a couple of times asking who went to Mount Carmel. I went to Mount Carmel. Me, Matt Bubala, graduated in 1990. Roger, you graduated from Evanston Township High School in?
1970.
1970. Look at that.
Yeah. 50 years coming up next year.
And Jess probably graduated from some high school in 2000.
Yeah.
Maybe even later. Jess, what year did you graduate high school? Was it 2010? Are we all 20 years apart? How crazy would that be?
That's weird.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
What year did you graduate high school? Roger and I didn't have to think about this.
and you're
the closest to it. Jeez.
2010, I think.
Did you really?
Oh, my God.
I think
God.
So.
Wow. We are all 20 years apart.
Yeah.
Because I graduated college in 2000.
Plus four. Carry the one.
2014.
Yeah, so you did.
Well, if you were just on the four-year plan, it would have been 2010 for high school.
It's been 5 years already. Right? Yeah.
Well, yeah, you're 5 years out of college this May.
That's amazing.
Are you going to the five-year reunion? Do they have that?
I have no idea.
No, not until the 10.
You never know.
I know. Well, actually, we had a 45th because we had a 40th, and then everyone started saying, you know, there's some people who may not make it to the 50th. Let's have a 45th. And some people haven't made it to the.
It's a maudlin way to look at things, but I suppose when you get to 45, that's probably true. Hey, Wally's called in, I think. Is this our buddy Wally?
It is, Matt. How are you?
Good, Wally. How are you? You're actually home right now, huh?
I'm actually home. Yeah, I haven't been calling in because I've been gone most of the weeks, but just not on the weekends. I've been home on the weekends, so that's been nice.
Yeah, I bet Mrs. Wally appreciates that.
It is nice.
Why are you up right now? Are you just kind of off your clock? Are you a lot of times up this late on the weekends because you're feeling like you're in another time zone?
Honestly, I figured I'd stay up and listen to you for a little while tonight.
Oh.
So, I usually am listening and texting with Jess, at least at the start of the show, but getting to sleep. But, this year I was in Italy for a while and been in Denver and Seattle and just downstate Illinois. So haven't been anywhere really sexy over the weekends, but you know I'll call in when I am.
Yes, we appreciate it as always, and we still, when the weather gets warm, when it's nicer out, and you have some time, you've got to come in and bring some photos in for us.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
And we'll just talk a little bit about your travels around the world.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, though, man, about the global entry. It's definitely worth the money. And like you said, even if you're not doing the international travel, the global entry will still get you the TSA pre-check.
Yeah, and you might have it in case you do go out of the country for a quick trip to Canada or Mexico, right?
Absolutely, anywhere. Yeah, just coming back in, honest to goodness, I mean, I've gotten off the plane. I mean, sometimes it's a long walk at the international terminal.
Yeah.
But you can get through customs in 3 minutes. I mean, if you can get right up to a kiosk, you just walk right through, and the only person you see is when you're leaving the baggage claim area, and they look at your little receipt that you get out of the kiosk, and they may ask to see your passport, and you're out of there, and that's it. It can be a pretty quick process and save a lot of time. But like you said, even on the domestic flights, having the TSA pre-check, even if those lines, typically are longer, they move faster.
Yes.
And people who are in there typically know what they're doing, so you don't get the people who are, first time flyers, whatever, that don't know what they need to do, and it can be a little bit daunting.
Yes, best money I ever spent, and listener world traveler Wally is somebody to certainly tell you that this is worthwhile. Yeah. All right, Wally, it was great to hear from you. Let's talk soon.
Okay, thanks, Matt. Right, take care of your voice.
I'll do my best. You have a good weekend. All right, quick break, and then the news with Roger next on 720 WGN. We're going to check the news with Roger real quick, and then what 9 Chicago landmarks are in danger, according to Preservation Chicago. Their executive director, Ward Miller, jumps on the phone with us in just a minute. Let's check the headlines, Roger.
Sweet home, Chicago.
Morning, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. Please excuse the raspy voice. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, high above Wacker Drive here in downtown Chicago. Joining us on the phone right now is the Executive Director of Preservation Chicago, Mr. Ward Miller. Good morning, Ward. How are you?
Yes, good morning. How are you? Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for being on the phone with us a little bit late at night here. We appreciate it. We know that you guys come out generally with the 7 most endangered every year, right? But this year you increased it to 9.
That's correct. There are 2 urgent needs here. which are really remarkable buildings. The James R. Thompson Center, otherwise known as the State of Illinois Building in the Loop, and 19 to-be-consolidated or closed Roman Catholic churches in the city. So that ended our list, if you will. So we had the seven plus those two.
So generally, Ward, explain to us, when you do the seven most endangered, are these are buildings that are not already landmarked, so they're not going to, they don't already have a designation that means that they will be preserved in some way, right? These are ones that you think should have some protection but haven't qualified for that as of yet. Is that correct?
Well, that's mostly the case, but we do have one building this year, an Art Deco treasure, the Laramie State Bank in the Austin neighborhood. That's really a remarkable building with this polychromed, bright mustard yellow and celery green terracotta with a lot of white, sort of an off-white trim. And it's a remarkable building that is a designated landmark. But unfortunately, it's fallen into foreclosure, and it has a hole in the roof. And so even landmarks occasionally need a little help. And this one needs really somebody to take it on and steward it. So, but yes, most of them are not landmark properties. And we try to spotlight these through our Chicago 7 outreach.
Well, what happens when a building is landmarked? You say it's still falling into disrepair. It's got holes in the roof. It needs work. What is the onus on the landlord to take care of that? And is there federal oversight? Are there people that get on them about, hey, you own a landmark building, you have to do this minimum amount to keep it, in a good state?
Well, we have something called demolition by neglect in Chicago, and sometimes these building owners don't necessarily take care of their properties. This is one where the owners really got ill and it fell into foreclosure. They're actually quite proud of their building. It's just that it became too big for them, and the building has just suffered from years and years of disinvestment. And usually, you know, if it's a downtown building or if it's a building along the lakefront, chances are we don't have those issues. But that's not always the case either. So it's really a case-by-case basis. But there is no federal oversight for designated Chicago landmarks. It's really the protections come in through the Chicago Landmarks Ordinance. The National Register of Historic Places encourages preservation, but it doesn't necessarily guarantee a building will be saved or protected. So it's a little dicey here. We only have a couple of tools in our toolbox here, and we're hoping to increase that in time with perhaps conservation districts. But right now, the only real way to protect a landmark building or a building in Chicago is to give it a landmark designation. And the Laramie State Bank is really an exception to the rule. So it is on our list this year to highlight it and to encourage a good steward to come forward.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about Jackson Park and the surrounding area. I went to Mount Carmel High School, which is not far from there. I worked at the Museum of Science and Industry for a few years while I was in high school. And so I graduated from Mount Carmel back in 1990, and Jackson Park was not a great park back then. And the whole area, of course, has languished economically. Tell us about your concerns about what's going on there, because from the outside, I would think any investment in the area is good for the city and certainly for the residents. But what are the concerns about what's happening there and what would happen if the presidential library and the whole park plan gets the go-ahead?
Yeah, so a couple things there. First of all, we welcome the Obama Presidential Center, not library, but a center, because Library will be elsewhere. The Obama Foundation and the city are wanting to take 20 acres of this really remarkable park designed by Frederick Law Olmsted. Now, Olmsted designed Central Park in New York, and he is by far the most important and significant landscape architect of the 19th century and early 20th century with his firm, his various firms. And these really are works of art. You know, these are lands that also belong to the people of Chicago for more than 130 years. Parklands are really a place to relax and to recover from, you know, the daily grind, so to speak. And we are very much supportive of the Obama Center, but on some vacant sites, privately owned sites, or tied to the University of Chicago, which owns quite a bit of land over there. And we want to encourage the center to relocate to those sites. You know, the parks are really special in Chicago. They're supposed to be forever open and free and tied to the lakefront. And the whole idea that politicians give away parkland for private developments, and this is a private museum and a private development, is really not a good precedent. And all the museums in the park, even though they look like they're on they were given parkland to build on, they were actually sites where the parks grew around these museums. And that's really especially the case on the museum campus at the Field Museum, the Shedd Aquarium, and the Planetarium. So we're encouraging better ideas. The city, as far as Jackson Park and repairs to the park, we really want the city to consider reinvesting in this park. It's really been neglected as far as its pathways and whatnot and some of its buildings for a while. But we really don't want to see 200 trees, old growth trees cut for the Obama Center, and another 2,000 trees approximately cut for a rethinking of the fairways at Jackson Park Golf Course and the South Shore Cultural Center. We just think that this is all very heavy-handed, and this is not a good way to treat an Olmsted landscape and a work of art.
All right. Well, Ward, so it's tough because I understand what you're saying. There's a history here and this architect and all these things. How much land would not be for, I know it would be private land technically then if the way they let this happen, but wouldn't there still be a ton of parkland? Wouldn't it still mostly be a park and an area for people to walk and enjoy just like it should be now?
I don't think we want to set a precedent for stealing parkland. And you know, I think that we face this every now and then. If we had brought the Olympics to Chicago in 2016 as proposed, every park would have been used for that event, and it would have had really damaging consequences and scars. They were talking about an Olympic stadium in the middle of Washington Park, another Olmsted Park. So, you know, I think we have to be very careful. Our parklands are safe, are sacred here in Chicago. They're world treasures. I mean, this is a model that's used throughout the world. And Frederick Law Olmsted and his works of his parks are really amazing treasures. So I think we have to be very careful. And our politicians should not be giving away parkland or offering it. And what we should be doing is if, you know, a museum wants to be in a park, I think we should be looking at creating additional parks and really encouraging quality of life issues here, not taking away public parkland that's been part of the public domain for 130 years and also the site of the World's Fair of 1893 with a lot of amazing treasures and old growth trees on these sites. So I think we have to be very careful where we go with that.
I understand, Ward, but to play devil's advocate, you would have been against us having the World's Fair there. There was all that. I'm sure they built all those buildings, all those temporary buildings. A lot of stuff got displaced and torn apart at the time. If you think about it, going back to the time, your group probably would have been pushing against that, wouldn't you think?
No, actually that's incorrect because Olmsted was involved in the planning of the World's Fair. He was the primary landscape architect. All the buildings were to be temporary, so they lasted for 6 months. They were created out of staff, which is like a plaster-like material with a wood frame. Some of them had steel frames, and that was all cleared away with the exception of the Palace of Fine Arts, which became the first field museum,
right,
which is now known as the Museum of Science and Industry. So these parks were to be rethought after the World's Fair and returned to what they were. As a matter of fact, Jackson Park wasn't completely finished before the World's Fair because of budgets and whatnot. So it really was returned to Olmsted's vision, or I should say built to Olmsted's vision, with the Museum of Science and Industry being the sole monument of a large scale in that park.
All right, let's jump over to the James R. Thompson Center.
Sure.
Governor Rauner wanted to sell it, wanted to tear it apart, was okay with it being destroyed. He really was not kind to that building, and that building has its issues, but he was not a sure. fan of it at all. Now that he's gone, are we still concerned about the Thompson Center?
We are. There's a bill on our new governor's desk, Governor Pritzker, and he's considering a sale of the building. And you know, we all understand that the building was controversial from its beginnings. It's designed by Helmut Jahn, who's a world-renowned architect. He designed the Sony Center in Berlin, which is highly successful and really modeled, if you will, after this building. It was meant to reflect the old federal center that was demolished in 1965 with a public space. And when you think about this building, it has a large public plaza. People that are not exactly fond of its exterior, however, when they walk inside and they realize there's that 17-story atrium and that skylit space that's all really public space, they're really intrigued. And that is one of the great interior spaces of our city, and a postmodern building that was built for the people of the state of Illinois and the citizens of Chicago. And it's really part of a governmental center that's, you know, across the street from City Hall and the county building. And of course, the Daly Center, built as the Chicago Civic Center, and the Brunswick Building, which is now another, which is another county building, the George Dunn Building. And, you know, the idea of using every inch of space and selling it to the highest bidder in the loop really does defeat the purpose of these structures and their plazas. You know, the whole idea of these kinds of buildings, like the Daly Center, like the Thompson Center, like the new Federal Center of 1965, and the First National Bank, now Chase Plaza, was to let light and air into the loop, and really does impact sunlight and people's views, and it allows places for people to congregate at lunchtime to enjoy a beam of sunshine, a concert, a farmer's market. It also allows a space for people to protest, to tell you the truth. So these buildings belong to all of us collectively. And I think it's sort of short-sighted to think of moving out all these state employees into rental buildings and then to turn this over for some, you know, very large building. We've got plenty of empty sites and underutilized sites, you know, in and around downtown, especially going, you know, westward and a little southwestward towards the post office. And I think that's a more appropriate place to build tall buildings and not necessarily in the heart of the central loop and diminish these plazas and this light and air, which is so critical to how we think of downtown Chicago.
Well, I'll actually agree with you on this one. I don't love that building. I've never loved that building, but I think it's important to have different works of art in our buildings. Instead of, like you said, just, oh, let's sell it, we can build something bigger with more usage. Those type of buildings set Chicago apart. They're part of the landscape of the city. And, you know, the Thompson Building's been featured in many movies, and it's kind of an iconic building in Chicago. And it would be a shame for us whenever a building doesn't seem to be as aesthetically pleasing anymore or doesn't seem to get as much bang for its buck to just throw it away. And I agree, the exterior is kind of, the colors scheme really needs to be changed. I think somebody could buy that building and fix it up and make it a jewel instead of somewhat of an eyesore as it sometimes seems now.
It's been neglected and a lot of deferred maintenance over time. And, you know, I think an important thing is that, you know, we can't all be arbitrators of good taste, and, you know, right. we can't really impose our views, our personal views on things. I think we have to take these things in stride and remember that, you know, there might be a time in the future where these buildings are greatly appreciated. Right now, at 35 years old, 40 years old, sometimes these buildings are hard for the general public, the larger public, to accept. But, you know, as a state office building, it was great. It built at great expense. And I think there's a lot of wonderful public spaces within this building on both the plaza level, the interior atrium, the concourse level below. And I think this building could be reactivated. There were concerts in this building once upon a time. And it was meant, its glass and its glassiness and its transparency were really meant to sort of talk to a building that where the public government and the general public could coalesce, and where there'd be transparency in government and a building for the people. And unfortunately, that was never really realized, if you will. But it could be, and I think that's important to think about what these things could be.
Ward, we got a quick call for you. Billy is in Downers Grove. Bill, you're on WGN. Good morning.
Yeah, Matt. Hey, listen, hot tea, honey, and lemon.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, now. Hey, listen, I've been listening to your guest, and I thoroughly agree with him. I love Montgomery Ward, and I think Sears was a participant, too. He said the lakefront is, you know, paramount to Chicago. Protect it, whatever. Regarding the Obama Center, if you will, I've been, you know, looking at all these properties that are for sale for a dollar. To, you know, I think that's the latest offer, if you will.
Right.
They should clear out a section of Southside Chicago and put up the Obama Library there. Parkland should be preserved for every resident of Chicago. It promotes sanity. It gives a person a place to, you know, relax and enjoy open spaces. That's why I think the Obama Library, interfering with the Park District's property, if you will, you know, disrupting all kinds of traffic, if you will, is utter idiocy. That's all my personal opinion.
Thank you very much, Bill. I appreciate it, Ward. So he's on your side. Now, I haven't looked at this as extensively as you have, Ward. I'm sure of that. But in my mind, Jackson Park has been in disrepair forever, and it's still going to be, I mean, am I wrong in this? It's still going to be, as they set it up, a lot of open space, a lot of space for people to walk. There would be buildings and other things that get in the way, and I'm sure parking, but there would still be a lot of open space there. Your beef with this is more, we're selling it to somebody private, and it's not being pure parkland anymore. Is that correct?
Yeah, and you know, Matt, the thing is that, we've neglected our parks. And, you know, this was a case in the 1960s and 70s when Ed Kelly was in office and heading the park district. And, you know, TIF monies and those kinds of things that take away monies from the parks and the schools, you know, and give it to areas of disinvestment or to developers. And I'm not here to argue that the benefits or the negative aspects of TIF dollars, but you know certainly these parks should be better maintained, and it's an embarrassment when you see the Comfort Station at South Shore Drive near 67th Street by Daniel Burnham falling apart. I mean the clay tile roof is falling in. The you know the columns are falling apart. They had to fence it off this last week, and you know we're thinking, you know, in our opinion, that these parks are not to be given away every 5 years with, you know, some offer that comes up, and really these parks should be preserved, and they should be landmarked because of their importance. There should be given a priority to invest in them because lots of people use these parks. And you know what? We were talking about the idea of a national monument status, some type of National Park Service partnership. So we wouldn't see these things, and maybe it could lift the load from the city and the park district to manage these parklands, especially along the lakefront. And we see these national parks you know, out west, but keep in mind that Pullman, you know, the south side of Chicago, the SS Beeman and George Pullman factory town just became a national landmark under President Obama. And, you know, the Indiana Dunes just became another national park, national monument. And you know what? This is the lakefront. It's a really amazing space, and you could really create that national monument status from, you know, from the from Rainbow Beach, if you will, all the way down to you know, Hollywood along the Chicago lakefront, and perhaps have, you know, the federal government and the National Park Service help the city of Chicago repair these parks, because for some reason the park district is failing. It's not it's not something to give to a private foundation to fix. We've already had enough privatization of a lot of aspects of park usage, which we can't go into today, but I really think we need a big idea so that this is not giveaway land. We should be building on top of, you know, the Illinois Central tracks, the South Shore tracks, Metro Electric is what it's called now, and, you know, expand the museum campus onto the Michael Reese site, green over some of these, you know, railroad tracks and railroad yards. There was a time not long ago where Millennium Park and where Illinois Center is and the Standard Oil Building, those were all railroad lands, and, you know, now they're beautiful parks and spaces. So let's be positive about this and shoot for high ideals, because right now, you know, the parks are getting shafted, really.
Ward Miller is the executive director of Preservation Chicago. You can read more about their list at preservationchicago.org. We're out of time because we have to get to the news, but Ward, it's always great talking to you. I appreciate the time tonight.
Thanks so much, Matt, and everybody can go to www.preservationchicago.org. We have a wonderful newsletter. Sign up for it. It's all free. Thanks so much.
Excellent. Thank you, sir. We'll talk soon. Ward Miller from Preservation Chicago. We've got the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming up next on 720 WGN. Got some good texts about Ward in our discussion with Preservation Chicago. We'll get back to that right after we do this. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. A couple minutes after 2 a.m., here's the news with Roger Badish. Morning, everybody. Matt Pabala with you here, 2:07 a.m. on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Roger Badish in the newsroom. Jess Raines is behind the glass. She'll answer the phone if you dial 312-981-7200. You can also text us there as well. For some reason, my text screen is working. Nobody else's here is, but mine is, so I can take your text.
That's because you're special.
981, thank you, 7200.
How's that pizza?
That's delicious, Rod. You're not even going to have one piece?
No.
Really?
I've got some sweet and sour shrimp.
The funny thing is, it used to be the reason we'd order this.
I know.
You always wanted the pizza.
I know. I used to bring the pizza back in the day. I have sweet and sour chicken with chicken egg rolls.
Nice.
Yeah.
Gluten-free.
Oh, of course.
I can't believe I didn't hear you say that. You always start with gluten-free.
Well, I don't make a big deal about that. It's just I like sweet and sour chicken.
Sweet and sour chicken with
shrimp fried rice.
See, I don't like the shrimp fried rice. I like chicken fried rice or vegetable fried rice.
Don't you like do you like shrimp?
No, that's
that's the
issue
problem
there.
By the way, I know you like space stuff, and I know you're going to get to some of your textures in a second.
Sure.
But this happened.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Ignition, liftoff.
Sounds good so far. Who's taking off there?
SpaceX.
And what are they doing?
They launched Crew Dragon spacecraft, latest step in the company's development of a vehicle designed to carry astronauts to the International Space Station. Mm. Lifted off just before 3 this morning from Cape Canaveral, about 8 years after NASA's last space shuttle mission.
So this is a rocket. This is the rocket that they're hoping is eventually going to carry crew to the space station, replacing the space shuttle.
Right, because they've been depending on the Russians
for 8 years
to carry crew members back and forth.
And did this have crew on board?
You know what? I'm going to have to look up the details on that. But they have been testing this for about the past month.
Mm-hmm.
It's been undergoing massive tests, and I think this is the latest. I think it's unmanned.
And I always forget, because there's a couple of competing companies. SpaceX,
yeah.
Is that Elon Musk, or is that, that's not Bezos? I thought it's Bezos, the Amazon guy.
Let me double check. I think SpaceX is Musk. Let me double check here.
While you're doing that, Mark has called in at 312-981-7200. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Good morning. I run a small theater company in Milwaukee, the Boulevard Theater.
Oh, excellent.
And And I've dealt with a lot of loss of voice and singers. What I suggested to your screener, who's really charming, is that ibuprofen will help take the swelling down because your vocal cords are swollen and they're rubbing against each other. So you need to relieve the swelling, and by taking some ibuprofen and keeping it in your system, as well as drinking cold beverages to take down the swelling of your vocal cords, that will relieve some of the chafing of your muscles, because that's all your throat is our muscles.
Interesting. Now, I don't have any ibuprofen with me. I do have Aleve, though. Can I take Aleve?
I don't know if Aleve takes on swelling.
I don't
swelling.
Think so. Okay. I have ibuprofen.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I will try that. Mark, what's the big production coming up? What do you got going on at the theater?
We're doing your life story. We hope to get Rami Malek to play you.
Well, that's good. Wait, is there something actually called? No, you're being funny, right?
I'm being funny. I'm
like, well, maybe there's a show called Your Life Story, and I'm misinterpreting this.
No, we're going to do a reading of Under
Teeth.
Milkwood.
Under Milkwood, okay.
By Dylan Thomas.
Oh.
That was a good movie.
Yeah. Do you want to be in it, Roger?
I would love to be in it.
We do put I have the to non have my, and non-profit, so there's no money.
That's, well, he put
that
the,
wouldn't change with
he
me.
Put the bad in bad acting, so it's okay.
Hey. Watch it now. I presume it's non-equity?
Yes, it is.
I'm okay with that.
Okay, you're cast.
Beautiful. Look at that.
And, well, let's negotiate here, Roger. How big of a role is this? Will there be a dressing room? Is there craft services?
I don't need a Norma Ray. Thank you very much.
if small nonprofit theaters, if I remember correctly, everyone shares the same dressing room. It's the hallway in the back.
Pretty much.
Yeah. You do your own makeup.
Yeah.
You bring your own costume.
You're wearing it right now.
Yeah. You help build the set. And you also sell tickets, take tickets, hand out the programs, and then clean up afterwards.
You've done this before.
Yeah.
it sounds like a real tough sell, though. Mark, I don't know that everybody's going to be jumping in after that. I think there's got to be some of, I guess just the thrill of being on the stage is what gets you there, right?
He agreed to do it, so we have witnesses on the air.
As long as it doesn't interfere with my work schedule, I'm fine.
Okay. We'll work around you.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, Mark, I'll let you two negotiate the rest of that off the air. Thank you very much for calling in, though. I do appreciate the tip. Doc is in Kansas City, I think. Hey, Doc, good morning.
Hey there. Hey, I got some information on that SpaceX flight.
Yeah.
It is unmanned. I think this is the last test flight before they'll put people on it, but it has a mannequin that has hundreds of sensors so that they can prove that it's okay to put humans on it. And the mannequin's name is Ripley, which was, I believe, Sigourney Weaver's character's name on Alien.
Yeah, yes, it was.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Isn't that interesting? We've come a long way from just throwing dogs or monkeys in the spacecraft. Now we have crash test dummy. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Well, that's neat.
All right, enjoying the show as always.
Thank you so much, Doc. We appreciate you calling in. Roger, SpaceX the one that then tries to re-land?
Yeah. Both companies are trying to make spacecraft that are reusable. Yeah.
Sort of like the space shuttle was.
Yeah, yeah.
Cheaper and faster.
And not only that, but the rockets themselves. I mean, they're trying to save as much of the spacecraft as possible to reuse time and again.
Well, isn't it the rockets that then land back on like aircraft carriers, basically, stuff, or they're trying to?
Right, because they have computer-guided whatever to try to help it bring it back down through the atmosphere and then land in a safe place. Some of it even landing the way it took off on its base.
Yeah.
This is Elon Musk, is SpaceX.
Okay.
Yeah, and so...
He's had a rough ride there for a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but like apparently he's not worried about money. Because he just keeps doing this stuff. So, but he's got a contract. These SpaceX and this other one have contracts with NASA, with the government. So they're getting money.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Well, thank you for sharing that with us.
Sure, sure.
Let's jump back into Preservation Chicago for a little bit and the endangered list, because there are a lot of good... all right, so 708 tries to explain it to us. SpaceX equals Musk. Musk is the new Steve Jobs. Blue Origin equals Bezos. Bezos just sells stuff. Okay. All right. That's that. Couple of texts about about preserving buildings and parkland and the state of Illinois center, the Thompson Building. 312 wrote, good design moves the city forward. We don't need to keep everything in homage to the past. 312 writes, I have a design degree too. Form needs to follow function, and it doesn't function. That's in that's a comment about the State of Illinois building. Same person wrote, that building has never been easy to heat or cool because of that atrium. It's miserable temperature-wise for the workers there. And where have these Save the Parks people been? Jackson Park is a disaster. They should have been working on it before now. Now they're just being obstructionists. Well, I think that's interesting because, you know, like I said to Ward, I'd have to look more into the whole plan for that park. But Jackson Park has been in disrepair and not been a great place to go forever. And there would still be a lot of parkland there. Yes, they would be offering it. And I don't know exactly how it works, because basically the museums pay a dollar for the land. They rent the land. I don't know if they'd actually be handing this land completely over to private interests. But we need investment in some of these places. In Jackson Park and the south side there, in that area where I went to high school by the Museum of Science and Industry, needs investment, needs business, and needs people to come down there and spend money. And that Obama Center would do that. And the reinvestment in the area, I think, would be really good for the city. And I understand we need to save all the parkland. I get it. But they're not building condos and taking away the parkland. They're putting something there that will enhance and rebuild and keep that parkland, you know, in good shape. And yes, the city should have been reinvesting, but they haven't been. And they're short on money, and they're in dire situations in some cases. So I think it makes sense. You know, I understand if you disagree and you want to protect the parkland at all costs, but I think sometimes there has to be sensible investment in the areas as well. The State of Illinois building is kind of an eyesore, and I understand people saying, God,
it doesn't work right.
But that can be fixed these days. I know when Blair Kamen's written about it, there's people that could come in, and that was built a long time ago. I'm sure they can fix it with investment, the HVAC and all those things that are issues over there. It's a different building. They shouldn't just tear it down and just throw up another building. And interesting, the things Ward was saying about the light and the open area, the plaza that's available there, those are important things to have. But, you know, when he always says, well, there's all these other buildings, there's these areas they should go, well, that's fine to say, Ward, but let's face it, it's location, location, location. The reason George Lucas didn't want to build his museum somewhere else is because that's not the location he wanted. Everybody wants their stuff in the best possible location. Jackson Park is a great location for the Obama Center. And the lakefront, of course, for George Lucas would have been this great place. But, you know, we didn't end up giving up the land to George Lucas, so you won that one. I think the Obama Center is going to end up happening, and I think it's going to be good for the city.
Well, I don't know. It's the court case has been moved forward. I mean, it's moving on. It has not been denied.
Sure.
So I think last week they got approval to continue on with the suit.
And that's fine. So that's fine. They can fight it out, but I think they're going to lose eventually.
Yeah.
That's my thinking. I could be wrong. Excuse me.
Well, look what happened. Look at all the money and the power that went behind the Lucas Museum. They didn't. They didn't build it
well,
there.
He eventually backed down.
Well, right, because it turned out to be more of a hassle than he wanted to deal with.
Right. No, I agree, and I think we should have figured out another way instead of just saying go build it somewhere else, which he wasn't going to do. You know, Ward was talking about how all this Millennium Park is built over train tracks and stuff.
It
like
is,
that.
Right.
Well, there's a lot of area right by the area George Lucas wanted to build that there's train tracks on the other side of Lakeshore Drive that actually, I think it was just this week or last week,
right,
there was a story that they're going to build high-rises over
exactly
there. And my pitch at the time was grass over part of Lakeshore Drive right there and make a rolling park area between Soldier Field and
That's pretty much
could have done some of that.
That's pretty much what they did when they relocated Lakeshore Drive.
Yeah,
if you remember,
they moved it to the other side of Soldier Field. It used to split around Soldier Field.
Exactly.
They moved everything to the other side, but on that side, on that west side of Soldier Field, you could parkland over some of Lakeshore Drive. It's not on the lake. It's to the west of Soldier Field.
Mm-hmm.
So make it a tunnel and just grass over some of it. You'll make more parkland. And then they could have put up that museum. They could have made it a bigger green space for the museum campus.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We're not in charge.
No, we're not. But you know, but people have to have a voice. I mean, Preservation Chicago's not in charge, but you have to, you know, be a loud voice for what you believe in and what you care about.
Mm-hmm.
I would have loved to have talked to him. I wonder how the tower's coming.
Which tower?
Our old tower, the Tribune Tower.
Oh.
When are condos going up for sale? We got to save our money up for that.
I've got other things to save my money up for.
I want a condo.
By the way, I'm...
How are we doing on the savings for Disney?
$3,400.
Nice.
It's a little slower lately because February was a slight drain on the finances because of all the observations we had. The birthday, the anniversary, Valentine's Day. So we had to make expenses.
I see. So. Are we still shooting for next summer? Or no, we're 2 years out? What are we doing? When's the trip?
Not this summer. Oh, there's no way.
No, not this summer.
The following summer, possibly. Yeah.
Following summer. Okay. Yeah. So you got...
But again, I still haven't decided about the book thing, so, you know.
How much is that draining on our Disney fund?
I don't know. I still haven't looked at the contract yet, because I'm not done writing.
You haven't looked at the contract?
Well, not since I got it. I can't remember.
Okay. I say Disney before book.
I know.
Disney could be the last chapter of the book.
Ooh. I like that idea.
There you go.
Yeah.
But that's got to come first, then.
Oh, by the way.
Yes, sir.
So, I don't know if you saw it, but knock on wood.
Okay.
My oncologist told me he doesn't want to see me anymore.
Oh, I saw that you demanded to go see him again.
Right.
What was up with that? You just wanted triple check?
I've heard from a lot of people who have gone before me as cancer survivors, and it's like 5 years out from surgery or from treatment where they have claimed they've gotten all the cancer. 5 years out seems to be some sort of magical time, apparently. And that's not from the patients, that's from the doctors. Mm-hmm. Like, if you've survived 5 years, depending on what type of cancer you had and how active it was, 5 years out seems to be the time where they say, you know what, you're doing fine. You don't need to keep coming to see us every 6 to 12 months. You're fine. Enjoy your life.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I've been told by a lot of people. And I've seen it online. A lot of people who follow me are cancer survivors, and they mentioned the same thing. I said it to him, and he says, nah, you're fine. With the kind of surgery you had, with the detail that they did on your surgery, and with the chemo that you had, you're fine. You've made it this far. You're going to be fine. He praised my regular physician, my general practitioner, who he doesn't know personally, but he's dealt with him, and he knows that my doctor knows as much as he does about cancer and warning signs and things like that from the conversations they've had, and he is that good. Then I asked him about something else. And that's where he kind of caved and said, all right, look, if you want to come see me in October, which would be the 5th year anniversary,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll give you a quick checkup. But, you know, all he does now is he takes blood. They do the blood test for any signs of of changes in the blood. And then he asks me if I've had any pain. That's my visit.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
So you'd like a little more? You'd like at least the hammer on the knee? What does he need to do to make you feel like you're...
Oh, I feel fine.
Maybe
seriously, I do. I don't need to go back.
I understand wanting to, especially
But that's just me. That's not like anything serious or anything. And I wasn't that adamant about it. It was like, hey, you know, I've heard about this 5-year thing. And he goes, no, you don't. I go, okay, fine.
But I miss you, Doc. Let me back.
Yeah, I know. He's a nice guy. He's not my original oncologist. Mm-hmm. He retired. Because, you know, after he dealt with me, he couldn't take anymore.
He's like, that's it. I can't handle this.
my regular doctor, he's the one who saved Bridget twice, and he saved me. So
good people to have around. Well, congratulations, Roger. We're happy that you're still doing well. And, you know, I don't know if the pizza, the lack thereof, is helping. I imagine when you see him at the five-year, he might be like, you know, you might have a slice of pizza.
Well, he did say he did say you kind of. And I know when I go see my urologist, who always gives me the evil eye when he sees how much weight I've gained. Because one of the questions I had after surgery was, now did you really sew that thing up really good?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, trust me, it's on good. So when I see him and he sees that I've gained 15 to 20 pounds since he last saw me, I'm afraid he may say, look, it ain't on that good. You need to lose weight.
Well, that might happen.
So we'll see. Right. But yeah, I'm feeling great, and I'm happy. And you saw that I splurged with the meal that I brought home for me and Bridget.
Yes, from Trader Joe's or Mariano's. I saw the gluten-free chocolate cake that looked really good.
It was so good.
Yeah.
Bridget's already finished hers. Half of mine is still left.
What do you mean already? It was like a couple days ago.
Oh, she polished it off 2 days ago.
Yeah. I would have given it 10 minutes. Once I walked in the door.
She kept doing a sliver and then a sliver.
Well, that's a smart way to do it, but I wouldn't have been able to do that.
Yeah, I know. And half of mine is left, and I checked the refrigerator to make sure it was still there. She hadn't taken it. Because she will.
Sneaking a bite here and there. That's what I'd be doing, too. I steal my kids' food all the time. All the time. I got no problem with that. 708 texted, I believe you are misinformed. The Obama Center will bring in minimal reinvestment and rehabilitation to the area. The center is being touted with a false facade, the Chicago way again. All right, well, maybe I'm misinformed. I don't know what your information is on that. I'm sure President Obama would say that's not true at all. There's going to be a lot of investment and a lot of rehabilitation. I know that whole park area would get rehabilitation at the very least, and it would bring people to the area, which hopefully would then bring money and bring restaurants and other things, and that would be good. Now, I'm sure you would say, no, that's not how it's going to work, and maybe you're right. I'm not sure. But I think we do need investment in some areas, and it's not going to happen through the park district, not down there. Hasn't in forever. 312-981-7200 is our number. I want to talk a little bit. We're going to do the news here in a minute. And then I think we're going to start chatting about this Bryce Harper signing.
Oh, gosh. I just saw something that a sports figure, like a retired sports figure. Mm-hmm. Here we go. Kurt Schilling thinks the Phillies will pursue Mike Trout also.
Yeah, they're not going to get him. I mean, everybody's probably going to pursue Mike Trout. Now, if Bryce Harper got this and Machado got that, quite honestly, Trout's worth about $400 million over 10 years. Yeah. I don't think he's going to get it, but I don't see the Phillies getting him, too. There's no way. They're going to be bankrupt. You can't keep throwing out contracts like this. Plus, there's no way they're going to be able to do it and be competitive without going well over the threshold to pay the luxury tax, and that gets expensive quickly. All right, we'll chat about all of that and your calls and text 312-981-7200 after we check the news, which is next. You're on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you here on 720 WGN. Sox fans maybe still getting over the sting of the offseason that wasn't. And the Sox made all the efforts to get Manny Machado. Didn't work out with him. I think in the long run, it would have been nice for the Sox to have a star player. God, I remember when I was talking to our buddy Phil Rogers, I don't know, 4 months ago or so, I think it was with Phil, and afterwards I was thinking, the Sox maybe will actually sign both of those guys. It seemed like there was a possibility for a short time that maybe Machado and Harper would both come to the South Side.
Exactly.
That would have been insane.
Completely fell apart.
It did. And I wouldn't say through any necessarily fault of the Sox. They were offering, it sounds like they were offering the money to Machado. I don't know what they truly offered, but it sounds more like players just decided not to come here, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
This at 538.com. The Philadelphia Phillies and star outfielder Bryce Harper on Thursday reached a record free agent agreement in terms of total dollars, $330 million, and years 13. After waiting 123 days since the World Series ended, Harper breaks the mark set just days earlier by Manny Machado. The previous open market record, Alex Rodriguez's free agent contract for $275 million with the Yankees on December 13, 2007, stood for 11 years. Harper's deal still falls short in terms of average annual value at only $25.4 million. For instance, A-Rod's mega deals signed in 2007 and 2001 each had greater average values, and off-season speculation expected that Harper might command more than $30 million per season. There is no opt-out clause in the deal, but there is a no-trade clause. Given the deal's less than expected average annual value and Harper's far longer than expected wait on the open market, the contract suggests that the baseball industry didn't quite know what to make of Bryce Harper. The good news for the Phillies is that Harper should help them immediately. Based on 100 simulations run for 538 by Out of the Park Developments, Harper will improve the Phillies from an 80.2 win team in 2019 to an 86.1 win team, though the computer forecast still had Philadelphia missing the postseason. Harper caps an aggressive offseason for the Phillies, who traded for catcher JT Romalto and shortstop John Segura, and added notable free agents Andrew McCutchen and David Robertson to a young core led by ace pitcher Aaron Nola and slugger Reese Hoskins. I didn't know Andrew McCutchen signed with them. So, and nobody's even mentioning our old friend Jake Arrieta.
That's right. Who I saw posted a welcome.
Oh, God. His tidy, like some European Speedo deal. Right?
Yeah.
He's so weird. But what's troubling...
But he's still good.
Well, and he's still in shape. He can pull off that outfit. What's troubling for the Phillies, who are now committed to Harper through his age 38 season in 2031. How old are you and I going to be in 2031?
You're going to have to move me in a wheelchair.
I'm going to turn 60 when he's finishing this contract. Oh, my God.
Wait a minute. 2031. This is...
13 years. I'm 47.
13 years. I'll be 67 in June. 80 years old.
So you're going to be 80, buddy.
Yeah.
Going on 80, Raj.
Holy moly. They won't be able to pry me out of this chair. I'll be glued in.
Can you imagine this show when I'm 60 and you're 80?
What do you say, Roger? Hey, let me look it up. I don't know.
I remember in my day, back when he first signed his contract.
Jess says instead of pizza, we'll be getting gummy bears. That's all we'll be able to chew.
I don't want gummy bears. I can't chew the gummy bears. Those are hard to chew with teeth, let alone without.
Oh, are you saying, Jess, we're going to have vodka gummy bears on the show?
Maybe.
Just give me the vodka.
Oh, Roger. So you'll take that, but no pizza?
When I'm 80, yeah.
He'll have the pizza then, too. Okay. So what's troubling for the Phillies, who are now committed to Harper through his age 38 season in 2031, is that there's a good chance Harper has already played his best baseball. Harper was on the cover of Sports Illustrated in 2009 at age 16, dubbed the most exciting prodigy since LeBron. A year later, he was the number one overall pick in the draft. He debuted as a 19-year-old in 2012 and won Rookie of the Year. In 2015, he posted a season of 10 wins above replacement and was named as the National League MVP. Since he reached the majors in 2012, he's 20th in position player war, and he owns a 900 OPS, that's on-base plus slugging. In many ways, he has lived up to the hype. But seven seasons into his career, we're not exactly sure what type of player Harper is. While he's shown stretches of brilliance, volatility in performance has been his most consistent trait. This has led to an unusual career trajectory to date. He's one of only 15 position players, 25 and younger, to own a 10-war season, according to BaseballReference.com. The rare company includes Ted Williams, Mike Trout, Willie Mays, Lou Gehrig, Cal Ripken Jr., but he's had just one elite-level season. His other campaigns have had a range of outcomes, from a 1.1 to a 5.1 war. Even within seasons, he's had dramatic peaks and valleys. Last year, for instance, he hit 214 with an 833 OPS in the first half, but was a star in the second half when he hit 300 with a 972 OPS. Injuries have played a role in this. Harper has played fewer than 120 games in three of his 7 years in the majors. And those partial seasons have also limited his ability to rack up WAR, which is a cumulative stat that rewards just showing up for work. 538 examined all players in MLB history who have had one season of 8 or more WAR, but only one, before turning 26. And then we studied the trajectory of those players' careers. There are 32 such players in MLB history, including three other than Harper who are still active: Aaron Judge, Matt Chapman, who hasn't played his age 26 season yet, and Evan Longoria. Of the 28 players who are no longer active, 17 never produced another 8-plus WAR season after their age 25 season. The historical players studied peaked at age 24 with a 6.6 war and 25 with a 6.5 war. Then they declined steadily. A player's peak is often earlier than conventional wisdom would expect. Jeff Zimmerman at Fangraphs found that while the average ball player peaks at age 27, good players peak at either 25 or 26 years old. While there are exceptions like Adrian Beltre and Henry Aaron, who had some of their best years later in their careers, the best baseball happens early for many excellent players. That doesn't mean that Harper or Machado, for that matter, can't be a star-level player regularly. But history is betting against him being a consistent MVP presence like Mike Trout is. Baseball may not quite know what Bryce Harper is, but the Phillies are going to find out.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it was that great of a deal.
Well, and you know, I mean, if it brings it, listen, Aroldis Chapman was a terrible deal for the Cubs.
Yeah.
Jose Quintana was a terrible deal for the Cubs. But the Cubs won a World Series. So I think we're okay with whatever deals the Cubs made, right? Because they did finally win that World Series. If the Phillies get a World Series while Bryce Harper is there, I think overall they're going to say it was worthwhile.
But if they get a World Series with Bryce Harper on the bench because of injury or underperformance...
As long as they get to a World Series, they're going to be okay with it. Because here's what you would say. If they get to a World Series with Bryce Harper on the team, whether he's playing or not, you're going to look at other free agents they signed, other whatever, 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 and they'll say the aura, the culture of winning that we brought in by committing to spending the money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If they don't win a World Series, then this will end up being an albatross. Because the last, you got to assume... Age 34 to 38, the last 4 years, mm-hmm. when they're still spending over $20 million a year on him, they're going to wish they had that money back.
Yeah.
Or at some point, he will agree to a trade because he finally decides, you know what, maybe I would like to win a World Series before I'm done.
Yeah.
And if they're not doing well and they, you know, the Yankees are suddenly wanting Bryce Harper, then he probably would waive that no trade clause to get his championship.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting. And then, you know, it seems like that's there was a lot of hesitation. These guys, you know, Bryce Harper just signed. We're already playing spring training games. We're a couple weeks. We're like 3 weeks into spring training now, at least, right? So he waited a long time to finally get his deal done.
But you think he was waiting for Machado to make the first move.
I think Scott Boras was waiting for Machado to sign so that they could then say, okay, we get more than he got.
Right.
But it just seems that, like, with both. Now, at least for Machado. I'm hearing a lot of good, reading a lot of good stuff about the Padres. They've got the best young farm system in baseball. They've got some other star players. They might be really good in the next couple of years. And they'll be able to find out before he exercises his opt-out clause, you know, was this worth it or not? And are they going to win? And maybe winning will keep Machado there, or maybe he'll do really well and there's a bigger contract out there and he'll opt out. It just seems like with Bryce Harper, it's just... I want the most money ever. If it's got to be 13 years, fine, whatever, and just do it. I'm just surprised that it became so much about, you know, and you really wondered, would the Cubs still sweep in at the last minute? Will there be something from the Cubs? We had heard a while back that supposedly the Cubs had said to Harper and his agent, you know, check back in with us, please, before you sign somewhere.
Right.
We'll see if we can do something at the time. The thinking, I think, was unless they could move Jason Hayward and his huge contract, there's no way. And the Ricketts were saying we're out of money, which doesn't make any sense at all because they seem to be just printing it up there.
Yeah.
But there's a good chance the Cubs were thinking we have all this young talent that is going to be due. And if we commit all this money to him, we're going to have to get rid of some of these guys.
Well, I just saw something yesterday when you're talking about the farm system and players that could be coming up to support a Bryce Harper or Manny Machado.
Mm-hmm.
Padres were ranked first. Sox were ranked third.
Sure.
And in the top 10, no Cubs. They were not in the top 10 as far as their farm system.
Well, the Cubs, think about it. I mean, so the Cubs have a lot of players on the team that they brought up, right?
They've correct, got, but they never replenished the farm system.
They've had to deal players away. That's how they got Jose Quintana, the number one Sox prospect, mm-hmm. Eloy Jimenez. That's a Cub, Jose Quintana. Aroldis Chapman cost us some players. So they use that farm system to bolster where they needed. And the Cubs don't get to draft real high anymore. Let's face it.
That's true.
Chris Bryant was like, what, the third overall pick? Because the Cubs sucked for a long time and they had those picks.
Right.
Now we're picking 20th through 28th, somewhere in there.
Left.
Well, there's still players left, but you're not getting that immediate impact player, right?
Right.
So now it's tougher. I'm sure they're doing the best they can in drafting players and trying to train them better and all of those things. But it's a tougher road when you're winning. There's no doubt about it. Okay. Yeah. Coming up next, we've got the stories that matter with Roger Badish from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN Radio. And you can hear everyone's favorite weatherman, Mr. Tom Skilling, weekday afternoons at 4 on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantes on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. 3 in the morning, you heard the tone. Let's check the latest news with Roger Badish. Matt Babala with you here on 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. By the way, so this was a story that really has got me on this kick about it really just being all about the money for Harper, because maybe he really loves the Phillies. Maybe he likes Pennsylvania. There was a story earlier this week that the Giants, the Giants had gotten in on this at the last minute, started meeting with Harper. Story is that they offered him $310 million over 12 years. Now you think, well, that's pretty competitive. 330 over 13, 310 over 12.
Yeah.
Close. Higher annual value. They were offering more per year, one less year.
Mm-hmm.
The report was that he didn't take that deal because of the high state taxes in California.
Really?
That the Giants had to go much higher for it to be the same value to him.
Right.
So that's really coming down to just caring about the money.
Yeah. And
because at almost $30 million a year, if I'm going to pay an extra $1 million in taxes in this state versus another state, really?
Plus, in Philadelphia, you're playing in cold weather.
Yeah.
And in California, you're really not. Plus, I understand he has family in California.
Well, he grew up in Las Vegas, so he would have been very close to home.
Right.
And the Giants just have a much better reputation for putting a winning product on the
field.
That's
true. That's true.
They've won a bunch of World Series in the last few years. Yeah. Great place to play.
Mm-hmm.
Hitting homers into McCovey Cove. Yeah. Come on. Now, what's interesting is just yesterday, though, did you see the TMZ video of the Giants CEO? Got into a public altercation, I think, with
his wife. Knocked his wife down? Well, she had a phone, and he grabbed it and knocked her down.
He's trying to take something out of her hand.
It was a phone.
It was her... What was the story with that?
I'm not sure. I didn't see the full video, I just read. I skim things. So I skimmed enough to get some information, but I don't have the whole story.
I only saw the video. It looked like they were in some sort of argument. He wanted to take something out of her hand, so he grabbed it.
It was the phone.
He doesn't, knock her down, per se. Like, he doesn't...
Well,
in
but
my
she
mind,
stumbled. She stumbled.
She's sitting down. And he's standing, and he goes to grab the phone from her. She's not giving it up, and they wrestle a little bit, and so, her chair falls over.
And the San Francisco Chronicle, which is apparently using the TMZ video, my gosh, she looks like she's got a smile on her face when she's hitting the floor. Giant CEO pulled his wife out of a chair and caused her to fall to the ground in a San Francisco plaza Friday morning, captured on video by a witness under investigation by city police. It shows him stepping over his wife as she sits in a chair in the plaza in Hayes Valley. She screams, "Oh my God, no, help," as Bauer appears to try to grab a phone out of her right hand. She hangs onto the phone, her chair tips. She falls to her back. Bear and his wife were having coffee when they engaged in an extended argument. Both were wearing suits. Who cares? 5-second video was provided by a worker in the area who said he witnessed the incident but spoke on the condition of anonymity. It does not make it clear what led to the incident. And of course, he sold the video. In another second video clip, she's heard saying, "Oh my God," Larry Bear holding a coffee cup is shown saying, "Pam, stop," before walking away from the plaza. Bear told the Chronicle, "My wife and I had an unfortunate public argument related to a family member, and she had an injured foot and she fell off her chair in the course of the argument. The matter is resolved. It was a squabble over a cell phone. Obviously, it's embarrassing." The pair issued a joint statement through the Giants later Friday. Regrettably, today we had a heated argument in public over a family matter. We are deeply embarrassed by the situation and have resolved the issue. A follow-up statement saying Bear apologized. I'm totally sorry for the pain that I brought to my wife, children, and to the organization. It is not reflective of the kind of person that I aspire to be, but it happened, and I will do whatever it takes to make sure that I never behave in such an inappropriate manner again. She then sent out a statement of her own. I would like to clarify the events of today. My husband and I had an argument in public about which we are quite embarrassed. I took his cell phone. He wanted it back, and I did not want to give it back. I started to get up, and the chair I was sitting in began to tip. If you can imagine those really rickety chairs they have in malls, that's what it looks like. It's a little metal. Due to an injury I sustained in my foot 3 days ago, I lost my balance. I did not sustain any injury based on what happened today. Larry and I always have been and still are happily married. Major League Baseball has a very strict domestic violence policy. They issued a statement. The league is aware of the incident. Just like any other situation like this, we'll immediately begin to gather the facts. We have no further comment until everything's completed. Police officer showed up at the scene, interviewed witnesses. No one called police initially, but they responded after the Chronicle posted a story about the episode on its website. That's under investigation. Witnesses who declined to be identified said they heard a couple arguing before the incident escalated. Multiple witnesses said Bear would get up and start to leave until the woman would say, "Larry, sit down, sit down." A man who worked at a nearby clothing shop said the argument was loud, lasted about 20 minutes, long enough that he could not help but hear details. He said at one point, Bear told his wife, "Let's go to counseling today." They sat down and started having an argument. "I'm suspicious. I know this guy from somewhere," and another guy said, "That's Larry Bear." Incident got physical about 11:30. He knocks her down off the chair, gets on top of her, puts his hands on her. This is one witness. She was screaming for help. She seemed pretty terrified. At that point, he put down his phone and intervened with some other men. As soon as he felt someone else grab him, he relaxed and got off. So that's basically what it is.
So it's unfortunate.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
I'm looking up California versus Pennsylvania tax rates. The most current data I have shows that at Bryce Harper's tax bracket, which would be the highest one,
mm-hmm.
he'd pay a 13.3% state tax in California.
Wow.
Pennsylvania looks like they have a flat marginal tax rate of 3.07%.
So he's going to get to keep more of it.
Well, a lot more of it.
Yeah.
I mean, so it is. It would be, if it was a $30 million a year contract, he'd be paying about $3 million more a year in taxes in the state of California.
Yeah.
So over the life of the contract, that's about 30. He's giving up basically a season of taxes. So it is a lot of money. I understand that. $30 million, that's a lot of money.
Interesting.
But when you're getting $300 million, overall, if I like the town better, I like the team, I like whatever, it shouldn't all come. I mean, I'm surprised that you're making that all come down to that.
Yeah.
But who knows what your agent's telling you about this or that or what, the other thing. But it's surprising that you tell the Giants, well, you're going to have to make up, you know, $30 million more to make up for the state income tax. That's tough. It puts the Dodgers and
the Angels
into the same boat.
Yeah. Well, then Machado will be making less with the Padres because of that tax.
Yes, he will. Or he'll keep less.
Yeah.
In the end. But, you know, you got to think there's something to be said for where you live, all of the other aspects of it versus just the bottom line.
Well, sure. I mean, look, so Machado is with the Padres. They're in California. San Diego's a big market.
It's not, though. I think it's a little more Milwaukee-ish. I mean,
you think so?
I do. I think it's so overshadowed. I mean, look, they couldn't keep their football team.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it's so overshadowed by Los Angeles there.
Well, but then so I'm, you know what I'm looking at here? So I'm looking at the marketability in each market for these players outside of what they're getting paid to play the game.
I think Philadelphia would be better than San Diego, but is it better than San Francisco? I don't know about that.
No, I don't think that.
I think San Francisco would be a better market.
Oh, yeah, for marketability.
I mean, the thing is, in Philly, if you don't play well, they're going to turn on you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's like, they're fickle.
Mm-hmm.
If things start going bad, he's going to, you know, not enjoy his time there.
And you know, fans in Philadelphia are going to turn on him even quicker if, for that amount of money, he doesn't produce.
Right.
They're going to be all over.
They'll boo him pretty quick.
Oh, my gosh.
The honeymoon could be short.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be interesting for him. And a real test of, you know, you say money can't buy happiness, and when you get over $300 million, does $30 million more really do anything different? You know, he's got his grandkids' grandkids could be taken care of with this contract, no matter where he signed.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, I would have my accountant storing money everywhere.
Yeah.
To try to avoid all the taxes.
But, well, and, of course you would, would have been moving to move wherever my family, myself, my playing career, everything would have been best. In the end, you'll get $30 million less because of the state taxes. You know, your agent tells you, well, here's the thing. If we go there, you're going to lose $30 million. Okay, but am I still going to have $300 million?
Yeah, right.
Yes,
right.
You will.
Okay.
Well, then aren't I okay with not having the 30 if I really like that town? Well, you might need that 30. Might I? What have I done that the $300 million didn't cover whatever I needed?
Yeah.
I think I should be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, 300. Yeah. I'm not him.
No.
But $300 million? Excuse me, I'm fine.
Yeah. I'm not going to complain about a whole lot, I don't think,
no,
at that point.
No.
Hey, let's jump back to Landmarks for a quick second. Bob's been kind enough to hang on the phone quite a bit. Hey, Bob, how are you this morning?
Very well.
What's going on, sir?
Well, I live in Lake Forest. I'm just a little bit north of Fort Sheridan. And what I'm having problem with, the problem you were talking about, Connie Owens said, with the parks in Chicago that he had designed and everything?
Sure.
Well, I knew Mr. Olmsted.
Okay.
And they wouldn't let this happen, what's happening down there. They built a berm on there's a strip there that used to be a landing strip for the helicopters and the an airplane. And they put a berm up,
You're talking about Migs Field?
Yeah, no, this is Haley Field. It's called Haley Army Beach. It's Haley Army Air Force.
Is this up in Lake Forest now you're speaking of?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
It's down now. This is the area that they cut that you can't see anymore. But when you're traveling on Sheridan Road, which is only the only road going north, you don't know there's a lake there. And the only time you see the lake is in Wilmette, all the way to Waukegan, and this is the only spot where you see it, and they put a berm up. Now, what I'm trying to do, and the meeting is Monday afternoon at 1 o'clock, I'm trying to get that berm cut down. And they keep giving me a runaround. This thing is a sacred place. This is where kids in Second War were trained, and how many of them died after they learned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, during the war and stuff like that. But nobody even knows there was an army base there now.
Yeah.
And if you've noticed lately in some of the magazines, the Legion and some of the other magazines, where they're saying that this has happened all over the country and it should not have happened, where all these pieces of land are covered over with projects and nobody even remembers the war.
Yeah.
Well, could anybody give me a hand? Could anybody call them the meeting on Monday?
If Roger or I call them, it's going to do nothing. We don't live in Lake Forest, and so they're not going to listen to us or care what we say, right? I mean, you need to talk to your neighbors and the people in the neighborhood who vote and who pay taxes there, who have a say in these things, and, you know, try to gather as much local interest as you can in fighting that fight. I know it's not easy, but
people don't care.
Yeah.
And another thing, we were talking about what's happening today. They should draft kids out of high school and let them learn what the world is really about.
We should have a military draft?
Yes.
Why should we? why do we want to do that, Bob?
Well, get them to understand that if you don't do something, you're going to have another war.
I don't think in the military we're training people to avoid war. We're getting them ready just in case we have.
I just let the kids know that we're losing. I don't know. I'm 95 years old. I can hardly talk.
Sure.
I don't know. There's a lot of problems today that I think can be at least alleviated some way, or help to get rid of it. But the kids today don't even know there was a second war.
Well, I don't. The kids today, I would say, Bob, more likely don't know about the first war. We don't hear about the first war. We hear about the second war still. Movies, things like that. World War II still has a lot of legs, I would say. We hear about that. World War I, we know nothing about. And some of the wars between here and there. I don't know that drafting and putting all the kids in the military necessarily helps us avoid another war. But I understand it teaches us responsibility, things like that. Sure.
My point is that they've got to grow up.
Well, I think that it would be tough for the military to have hundreds of thousands of kids in the military who have no interest in being in the military. I think our military right now is people that chose to go into the military to serve their country and to fight and to earn money through the GI Bill or whatever their reasons are, but at least they decided they want to be there. I think only in true times of war and need can we have a draft and expect that to work. Otherwise, you'd have a military full of people going, why the hell am I here? I don't want to be here. And those have got to be tough kids to train.
Yeah, I may have put this across the wrong way.
No, that's okay. That's all right.
You know, but I feel that the kids today just don't have any responsibility of anything. And that's one of the reasons we have so much trouble.
Well,
that's my feeling.
Well, and I understand that. And I wonder if every generation says that at some point. And you've been through your 95,
sure they do.
You've been through a few generations. This probably isn't the first time that you've said something like that over the years.
Well, you know, in 1942, I graduated from high school, and 3 weeks later, I was in the service.
Sure.
Well, I didn't want to go.
No, but I bet you at least felt like this is something that does have to be done.
Well, we didn't have a choice.
Sure. But in 42, didn't you feel, I mean, with what was going on in the world, and we'd already been bombed at Pearl Harbor, I imagine that there was a bit of, you know, I don't want to go do this, but I understand why I'm being sent here. I understand why we need to fight this fight.
You know, well, you're more knowledgeable about it than I am. I'll tell you that.
Well, Bob, at this point, you've forgotten more than I'll ever know, but I doubt that I'm more knowledgeable about any of that than you are. So in 42, you got drafted or you entered?
I entered.
You just entered of your own accord?
No, I was drafted, that's when I went in, right out of high school.
In 42. And where
in 19...
Where did you end up going?
I was in England.
Wow.
I was in the Air Force over there, B-17s and 51s.
No kidding.
Yeah.
You must have some stories to tell, Bob.
I got a lot of them, but nobody cares.
No. Well, we appreciate your service. Whether you wanted to or not, you did what you had to do back in the day and, you know, helped save our freedoms at a time when they were definitely in peril.
And I had three brothers in also.
And they also all served?
Yeah.
At the same time?
All at the same time.
So this was before we had any rules about not all the family members being able to serve at the same time, huh?
Well, they couldn't serve together.
Oh, okay. You just had you all separated out?
Yeah, they couldn't serve together. But that was like the Sullivan brothers, I think it was, in the Navy, and they all died in Pearl Harbor.
Right.
Yeah, but I appreciate your time with
Absolutely,
me, and I just can't believe that Well, I'll let you know Monday.
That sounds good. Yeah, call us next weekend and let us know what happened at your meeting.
I'm going to do that.
All right, Bob, we appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
I appreciate it.
You bet.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Served in 1942. Man, we appreciate you calling in, Bob. That's great. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala with you here. Lou comes up after. We've got, we've got Orion Samuelson at 5 a.m. with the morning show. We've got Mike Steven with Outside the Loop. And then you get your Lou Manfredini at 7 a.m. But tonight on WGN-TV, Tomasulo's Mall Walking once again with the ladies of Norridge. It's Pat Tomasulo's Man of the People. That's all new. And tonight at 10 on WGN-TV. Coming up in just a minute, we'll have some news with Mr. Badish. That reminds me, we're talking about Friends of the Park and like all of our stuff here in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk after the news just a little bit about McCormick Center. I was out with a client today.
McCormick Place?
Yes, McCormick Place.
Thank you.
Was it ever called McCormick Center? I don't know where I came up with McCormick Center. I guess I'm confusing Obama Center.
Oh.
Okay. McCormick Place, and mm-hmm. that's our big place for conventions and conferences,
sure.
and things like right. that. And our client was in town for the houseware show, which is going on at McCormick Place mm-hmm. this weekend. I just want to talk a little bit about that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Right now it's 3:30 in the morning. Let's check some headlines with Mr. Badish. 3:34 in the morning. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. Thanks for hanging out all night with us, everybody. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, hanging out with you until 5 in the morning.
How's that throat holding up?
It's actually feeling a little bit better.
You sound a little bit better.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think the pizza helped. I was looking at, we'll talk about McCormick Place in a minute, but I was thinking more about Bryce Harper and this long-term contract and mm-hmm. wondering who has that contract really worked out for. A-Rod signed the huge deal at the time, 10 years,
mm-hmm.
I think it was 2001 when he signed the first deal, 10 years, $250 million with the Texas Rangers. And the stories are now that the Rangers just outbid themselves like crazy on that. Like the next highest offer was like $150 million. They didn't need to do this. But Boris was good, got them to bid against themselves, got him to $250 million.
Mm-hmm.
A few years into that, they wanted out of it because he was eating up, you know, at the time, they were at about $100, $125 million payroll. He was eating up like 20 to 25% of their whole payroll.
Yeah.
In baseball, where you need 25 players, you can't do that with one player, right? It just mm-hmm. doesn't make sense.
Right.
Now, the Phillies are going to spend $25 million on him. Their max that they'll probably spend on their whole team is for any team is around after $206 million, I believe it is. After $206 million, you start paying a luxury tax.
Oh,
so no team wants to do that. If you go, if I don't know that I have this exact, but it's something like $206 million, you hit a tax.
Okay.
At $240 million, I think it's about $240 million. The penalty increases. Not only are you paying a tax, but you'll drop 10 places down in draft.
Ooh.
So you really don't want to go over that because then it really affects
right,
you.
Sure.
The Cubs had room to sign Bryce Harper, pay the tax, and miss the penalty for the draft. They could have done both. They're claiming they don't have the money, or maybe I think it's partly that the Cubs know Kyle Schwarber, Albert Almora, Javi Baez, Chris Bryant, these guys are all going to be due for real money soon.
Free
They're
agency.
All under player control, and mm-hmm. they want to keep any of those pieces. It's going to be tough to have somebody else there eating up all that salary.
Yeah, exactly.
So they decide not to make it. So I was thinking about, the A-Rod thing, so A-Rod opts out after a few years, or the Rangers trade him to the Yankees
mm-hmm.
and the rest of his contract. Then he has an opt-out. He actually takes the opt-out when he's not even playing well,
mm-hmm.
and the Yankees signed him to an even bigger contract, which I would think the Yankees have to regret because he just never, he had his PED suspensions, like he had all these mm-hmm. issues. In the end, maybe they say it worked out. It didn't matter to the Yankees. They got more money than God, so what does it matter to them?
Right.
I was thinking about the Blackhawks and Marian Hossa. You know, when the Hawks signed, now you could say, listen, no matter what happens with Hossa, the Hawks did win 3 cups with him, and that's the truth.
Yeah.
You know, so whatever it was, but the Hawks at the time signed Hossa to a 12-year, $63 million contract.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he wasn't really young when the Hawks signed him to that. He'd been around for quite a while. They signed him in 2009. He had been drafted in 97.
Wow.
So he'd already had a long time in the league when the Hawks gave him that contract. Now, he did then come here and win three cups, so it was worth it. But the Hawks actually, and then you remember he retired because he had the skin condition.
That's right.
He still had a number of years left on the contract, so he hasn't played in the last couple of years, right? Or was last year the first year? Maybe last year was the first year he didn't play.
I think it's been 2 years.
So he got paid a lot of the money up front,
mm-hmm.
but they split it up for the salary cap divided by the number of the years.
Gotcha.
So he is still a $5.275 million cap hit. But the Hawks traded away his rights, despite the fact that he's retired, mm-hmm. to the Coyotes. But the Hawks had to send Vinny Hinostroza and some other pieces, take back some pieces. Marcus Kruger actually plays for them now. But the Coyotes are eating that cap hit for the next few years. In the last year of it, 2020 to 2021, I'm reading it, capfriendly.com, his cap hit will be 9.9%.
Jeez. That's a lot for the one Coyotes. Player.
Yeah, it is a
Who's
lot.
Not playing?
Who's not playing. So it was good that the Hawks were able to deal him, do something like that to save about $4 million in cap room. But
has it gotten him a player that's helping him win the championship?
Well, you know, the Hawks are struggling to even make the playoffs right now. But, you know, they've got big contracts to host to Jonathan Taves and Patrick Kane, who are well worth it. Mm-hmm. Brent Seabrook and Duncan Keith are probably still costing them. I mean, they're on the older end of some of these star players. So it's going to be tough for the Hawks. But it was nice to see them get Corey Crawford back, and they won in L.A. the other night. They've got a game at, is it 2 o'clock today, Raj?
Mm-hmm. 2:30.
2:30 today, pregame, 3 o'clock, first puck.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have to win a bunch of games if they're going to make it. That's for sure. They got a lot of teams they got to leapfrog.
What are they, 5 points out? Four points out?
They were 5 points out as of last night, I believe.
After they won. Okay. They were 5 points out.
I believe they were five.
They
points
were
out.
6 points out,
but some teams still have a game in hand on them. So it's going to be tough.
Yeah,
it's going to be tough. Real quick, I want to talk about McCormick Place.
Okay.
So I was with a client earlier today who's in town for the houseware show, and I was asking him, "What do you think of McCormick Place?" Because I always find McCormick Place, and you know, I don't go there often. I've been to the auto show, and when I ran in marathons, we used to have to go to pick up our stuff there.
Oh, okay.
And there'd be a little thing going on.
Yeah.
But I've had to go over the years with the veterinary conferences to a bunch of different cities. San Diego, we go to Vegas every year, we go to Orlando every year, and then some of them travel around to different places. I've been in San Antonio, I've been to Austin, I've been to Nashville a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really, to me, hurting us as far as, and the gentleman I was talking to, he's like, well, is Chicago really a big convention town? And I said, yeah, we used to have really big conventions here, and we've been losing them to Vegas and Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think it's, you know, Chicago's a good sell because it's convenient for anybody in the country to get to, right? You've got to
wear. But it's only half a year sell.
That's the issue.
Because
that's
of the
this
weather.
Houseware show's going on right now, and it's not great weather to be here.
Nope.
All the more reason, I think, if Chicago does care about the convention industry and bringing people in, we need to develop a better space for these conventions.
What do you mean, better space?
McCormick Center is a huge open space. Sure, there's all sorts of room there. But all the hotels they're staying in, they're busing to, the restaurants, the bars. Not, you know, I know that they probably want people to travel around the city, but when I go to San Diego, land at the airport, it's like a 10-minute cab ride to the convention area, which is on the ocean or on the inlet, right by Petco Park where the Padres play, and the Gaslight District, which is all sorts of bars and restaurants. There's all sorts of hotels. Everything is right
but
there.
But they've planned that way.
Of course they did. Well, I'm not saying this is going to just happen. We have to plan it. Yes. But we've had McCormick Place there for how long? 50, 60 years?
Since the, I think, the late 60s or mid 60s.
Isn't that when it burnt down the first time?
Yeah. Actually, 2 days after we went to a concert there.
Really? Who'd you go see?
At the Airy Crown. We saw Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass, my whole family. And 2 days later, it burned down. They were a hot band.
Oh, boy. He had to do that. You're terrible. Jeez.
I've been waiting about 30 years to do that.
Glad we could make your dreams come
Thank
true.
Thank you so much. Check that one off the bucket list.
But I think that they need more hotels, more bars, more restaurants.
But
more
they
stuff
do.
Right there.
I know. Look, Vegas is... come on.
You're not going to compete with Vegas.
You can't compete with Vegas on space because they have so much land out there that's not being used, and they could expand like
McCormick
crazy.
McCormick Place has more than enough space.
But they have to expand inland. They can't expand up and down the lakefront. They're restricted by how much space they can use on the
but
lakefront.
But think about how much space is right there just to the west of McCormick Place. There's a lot.
Right, and
it's
they
not
have
like
expanded.
A well-built up
that's
area.
That's where the new part of McCormick Place was built.
I don't need more McCormick Place. I need 3 hotels and 18 bars.
And that's but even in Vegas, you stay in the hotels on the Strip. There's only a couple of hotels that are really close to the convention center.
You know, yeah,
or you stay downtown and you bus into the convention center.
I wonder how many conventions are really going on at that convention center in Vegas.
Oh, you're talking about the individual hotels?
The conference
have?
I go to
yeah.
in Vegas is in the Mandalay Bay,
okay.
And they have a huge convention space right there.
And
it's
a lot
huge.
Of the hotels in Chicago have very large convention spaces. They're just the right fit for the hotel spaces, but they're too small for McCormick Place. What goes into McCormick Place? Auto show?
I bet we do not have...
The houseware show?
I bet we do not have a hotel with... even half the space of Mandalay Bay. There's
I don't know what
room.
Mandalay Bay
it's
is.
It's huge.
But you go next door. What's the hotel next door here?
To us? Oh, across the river, the Sheraton?
No. Right next door, where the Palm restaurant is.
I don't know.
Jess, do you know the hotel that's right next? I should know it right off the top of my head, and I don't. Either way, instead of running home tonight,
I'm not going to go run through a hotel and check out their ballroom space. It's 5 a.m.
I'm not kidding. The space is huge. I'm not kidding. I walked back there, and I was blown away with how much that convention space is down there. It is humongous. You can't tell the size of it by just walking past the hallway. Mm-hmm. You have to go actually around on the hotel side. And where the entrance to the convention space is, and walk in and look at it. It is humongous.
Hmm.
Now, do the hotels in Vegas have bigger convention space? Yes, I've been in the convention space in the Sahara Hotel, which used to host the Jerry Lewis NBA Telethon. And I've been in that space when the dividing doors have been open. You can't hear your echo, but there's an echo in there.
Yeah.
It's just so far away, it doesn't have the strength to get back to you.
Mm.
But it's huge. Do we have places like that? We've got a couple of the hotels downtown that were the ones that used to host conventions before McCormick Place was built. But we're not... McCormick Place was built to compete specifically with Vegas and New York and L.A. and San Francisco, and that's why they built the addition onto it. And when they built their addition, Vegas built even more onto their main convention space. So it's a constant battle between the cities to host the conventions. Unfortunately, conventions aren't as big as they used to be. It doesn't draw the number of people that they used to draw. And I'm talking any city, and a lot of these conventions are for associations or for other groups like the broadcasters or something like that. And they're just not drawing the people anymore because there are less and less people working in that industry. So they're looking for smaller spaces. And that's why I think the hotels, the one next to us, I know, I walk past it every weekend, there's a convention booked into it.
Mm.
And the ones downtown are having the conventions that you might think would use McCormick Place, but one, it's too expensive, and two, it's too big. That's why you can't... What other conventions do you get in town that are as big as the auto show?
Well, you got the auto show, this houseware show I think is
right.
Pretty huge, and
you
probably that candy show, right?
The candy show, and I think there's one other one that uses McCormick Place, and it's pretty big. But the other main reason is that we don't get other big ones is the weather. Did you know that the NAB, which is a huge broadcasters convention, used to have two conventions?
I didn't.
A year? Back in the late 60s, early 70s, they had the summer convention here, but good not at McCormick Place. They had it at hotels. Mm-hmm. And the winter convention in Vegas.
And now they just have the winter
one. Now they just have the big one in, and it's coming up, I think, in March or April. I think.
Is that even anywhere near as big as it used to be? I would imagine. Yeah,
you know what? It's not as big as it used to be, but it's still spread out. Yeah. It's you have to walk both buildings to find everything.
You know, it's interesting. I bet you McCormick Place is public, so I would think that this data is available, but I'd love to know how much of that space is used. Like, what percentage are we booking up that space at? Is it 80%? Is it 30%?
I don't think it is. I think they're making their money from a lot of the smaller gatherings in the newer section, because, you know, there's a lot of smaller spaces in the newer section. I know that Chicago Public Schools used that, one of the exhibit spaces in the newer section, for their high school fair. Mm-hmm. And they filled up that whole hall, but there were other halls equal size on other levels that weren't being used at that time.
The new addition to McCormick Place is west of the original McCormick Place, right?
Correct. It's across Lakeshore Drive. Yeah. It's west of Lakeshore Drive, yeah. And they're supposed to build a new hotel over there now.
Well, keep doing that. A few more bars. They've got the Wintrust Arena there now, right?
Right. Which, I don't know what they're going to have there as far as entertainment goes. I know it's...
Well, they've got DePaul basketball.
It's DePaul, okay.
But, yeah, they need to start booking concerts and stuff.
Well, yeah.
I would think.
Yeah.
All right, 312-981-7200. Carrie is in Sycamore and called in about Mariehosa. Hey, Carrie, how are you this morning?
Hey, Matt. Yeah, I was calling about Mariehosa, but yeah, the convention thing is interesting too. It's the Hyatt that Roger's thinking about, and I've been in that space. It's gigantic. He's right. But as far as Hosa goes, there's also slightly lesser known rule about the cap in the NHL, and that's there's a minimum salary too, and you get fined if you stay under that. So that's why a lot of these teams will do these moves where they will trade for a player who may not even be playing. And that's the league's way of trying to make sure that every team stays competitive and just doesn't spend any money.
So the Coyotes might have taken that in part just to take the hit on the cap, even though it's not costing them the money.
Yeah, because they were spending below the cap, and you get fined for that too. There's a minimum and a maximum. They were below the minimum.
No kidding. Interesting.
All right, it's interesting. It's a rule. Yeah, I heard that when they traded them, because I think David had explained it.
Yeah. Yeah, because otherwise you would think, why? Because they only gave up Vinny Hinostroza. It's not like they gave up a huge star player, too, to unload it. It was, you know, Hinostroza was a nice player and all, but it didn't kill the Hawks to give him up and saved them some space in the meantime. All right, Kerry, thank you so much. We appreciate the call.
Thanks.
Have a good weekend. Thank you, sir. And Mike has a comment on casinos. Hey, Mike, how are you this morning?
Hey, Matt, how are you? I may be a little bit off kilter on your subject here, but I got in a little late. But here's what I'm really baffled by in terms of Chicago not jumping on early, or the Illinois Gaming Board not allowing more casino licenses. I think they only have at one point like 10 or something. But my point is, you know, I live in the western suburbs, and they've, in the last four, maybe it's been like 9-10 years, these little video poker machine places have popped up nearly on every corner.
Sure.
Restaurants, nightclubs, gas stations,
yep.
They have them.
Yeah.
And I have two friends of mine who own them. And you know what? They have five little machines, a lower class liquor license where they can't sell hard liquor, but they can sell beer and wine. And they, you know, they can have like a signature food or something. But my point is, one girl, for example, a buddy of mine, she opened up 3 years ago. She didn't know how she was going to last, but she used to open up at 3 in the afternoon. Guess what time she opens up now?
10 in the morning.
8 in the morning.
Oh, God.
8 in the morning, and they go all day long. There's other places that I know of that open up at 6 in the morning.
And it's just people in there playing slots all day long?
All day long, in and out, in and out. And you know what? That's what's going to kill Chicago. They're getting into the game way late. That's what's killing the casinos. Why go all the way to Indiana or wherever when you can just go down the block and try to win some money? There's people winning money all day long.
Yeah, but there is a difference. At the casino, you can play blackjack and all sorts of things.
I agree.
Here, you're just doing video poker or whatever it is. But it is weird. I'll go into a BP and there's somebody sitting there, you know, a couple sitting there playing video game, playing the video poker stuff. And I'm just like, this is what you're doing on your Saturday? You're playing at the gas station? It amazes me. And you're right.
It's so amazing.
Places are popping up like crazy. You know, at first all the bars and restaurants suddenly made this one tiny little closet that you have to be 21 and over to go into, and there's two video machines. But now all these places, what are they called? Not Nancy's or maybe Elsie's.
Yeah.
Maybe there's one called Elsie's.
Nancy's, Becky's or something.
Yeah.
They all have like these chains now. It's really amazing. And they're all over everywhere but Chicago. And I think it was obviously political. Daly couldn't figure out how to get involved, or Emmanuel, or whatever. But they should have picked up on this years ago.
So
I'm not saying it's too late.
Sure. Well, it'll be interesting with the sports betting coming through. I wonder if a casino will finally come to Chicago, and that would be something to put down by McCormick Place, quite honestly. Mike, so your friend owns some of these, and they are making money.
She's making money.
Man, no kidding. All right, have a great weekend, buddy. Thanks for calling in.
Take care. Bye.
312-981-7200. Coming up, the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom with your Roger Badish. 312-981-7200. We got Orion coming up. Jess, do you remember your last bump? Caller wants to know title and artist from that bump. You remember the last one you played? It was a country song.
Yes.
What was it?
Blue Tacoma. It's by Russell Dickerson, and he's actually doing a show in Rosemont tonight.
Oh, is this the show you're going to tonight?
No, I won't be going because I'll be doing a Mardi Gras crawl.
You just asked me off the air, do you want to go to a show tonight?
Well, it starts at like 8:30, and I get done at 9, so I still could make it.
Yeah, you could. Where is it at in Rosemont, in the little park there?
At Joe's.
Is that in there where the Hofbrauhaus is and all that fun stuff?
It's in
their
like
little entertainment district?
Mm-hmm.
You know what's fun there? Have you ever done the iFly yet?
No.
All right, so you and Stefan are always looking for interesting little things to do. Have you heard of iFly?
Yes. But
it's like,
doesn't it take a long time?
No.
Oh.
No, actually, for what it costs, it's extremely short, quite honestly. It depends on how crowded it is probably when you go there.
Oh,
but
okay.
You get into this ridiculous wind tunnel, and you actually float like you're skydiving. It's awesome. You would really enjoy it.
I'm afraid of heights, though.
And so am I. I would never jump out of a plane in my life.
I know.
But you're not high up. Like, you walk into this room, there's like a grated fence.
Okay.
Almost like a chain link fence.
Okay.
Okay? So there's big holes in it, but you can walk in there on it. But then they turn on this fan, which is blowing an insane million miles an hour. So that as you walk in, the guy that helps you like kind of grabs you and lifts you up on your side and pulls you in, and then you're floating. And then they hold on to you and help you float, or if you're doing really well, they'll let you go. And you float around, you kind of spin around, and you know, when they lower it, you just lower yourself back down and stand on the thing. You're not in there freaking out like a height issue at all. And if you get good at it, they'll let you go at the end up really high because it can go up 10 or 15 feet up. And in between people doing this, because they'll control it, they'll keep it as simple as you want if you're nervous. But then they'll do tricks when you're not in there, flying around, somersault circles, flying up and down. It's really pretty cool.
Have you taken the kids there?
Yeah, we took them there for their birthday 2 years ago, I think. And we all did it. It was a blast.
Okay, maybe.
The funny thing is when you get in there, you have to remember to breathe. I'm serious, because the wind is blowing in your face so hard, like literally pulling your cheeks and your face back, that you're like, you forget to just breathe. Because the wind is blowing at you so hard, it's like you're scared to actually breathe because it's hitting you in the face so hard. But it is fun. But you're only in there for like 30 or 40 seconds. It's
what?
Crazy.
That's
it? Yeah. It's not a lot of time. And I think it costs you $35 or $40. but it's a lot of fun. You would enjoy it. You guys should do that. All right. We got news coming up here in a minute. 720 WGN. 15 says, I just left the gas station in Kankakee. All five slot machines were full. There were four people standing in line waiting. It's 3:45 a.m. There is a demand. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet on weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. You heard the tone, 4:01 in the morning. Here's the news with Roger Badish. Matt Bubala with you here for another hour on 720 WGN. Coming up at 5 a.m., we've got Orion with the morning show. Roger, what did you say, 13 degrees for a high on what?
On Monday. What are you showing?
17 degrees, but I put in my zip code where Black Dog is, and that's a little bit further off the lake. I don't know if that makes a difference. Sunday night,
no, because that the high is measured at O'Hare.
Oh, so you're doing O'Hare? Okay,
yeah,
so
I will have a different temperature. That's an O'Hare. Now mine says Monday, yeah, 17 high, 8 low.
Yeah, Sunday night,
down
tomorrow
to two.
Night, I've got one,
okay.
One stinking freaking degree.
Yeah. And it's going to stay in the 30s through the rest of the week. Next weekend, snow in the 30s.
Yeah, I have 37 for a high on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Next Saturday, 35 for high next Sunday. Mm-hmm. And then the 14th, 15th, 16th, around St. Patrick's Day weekend, we'll get up into the 40s.
Woohoo!
So we got that going for us.
Yeah.
So now with the winter we've had and the way March is starting, what's right. your prediction for Cubs and Sox opening days? Snowed out. Just really cold and it sucks, or we get that miracle 60-degree day that we
no,
so rarely get
I don't
for
think we're getting
day.
The miracle 60-degree
Neither of them
day.
Are opening at home, I don't think.
Yeah, but they're back after like two
after like a
series.
Week or so.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so it's still going to be, you know, like the 8th or more of April, I believe, before either of them have home.
Yeah, they're starting earlier this year.
Yeah.
Actually, I've got 20, I just put on, posted on my web, or on my social media, you know, I'm doing that countdown.
Right.
So we're 26 days away from opening day, and I'm taking opening day as whatever the first game being played season, is sure. of all the teams.
And actually, I think that might be, no, it's not the Cubs, is it? I don't think it is the Cubs.
No, it's usually,
maybe I'm confusing. I
usually
think
it's an East Coast team, usually.
Well, they've been changing it around.
Because
it used to always be the Reds. They'd have the day game that opened the season. That was the historical opener. And now there was, you know, now, and that used to be on a Monday, right? Then they started moving it to Sunday night.
It's yeah.
usually a night game that open kicks yeah. off the season now.
So if it's 26 days, we're opening up end of March.
Yeah.
Is opening day. And it's like, wait a minute. Didn't we used to have opening day around April 8th or 10th? And just getting earlier and earlier.
Well, because they've added rounds of the playoffs.
Yeah.
So they got to start the season a little earlier.
And they don't want the World Series to be where everyone's freezing there.
Right, right. And I think there's some extra days around the All-Star break now the players have negotiated. So
oh.
you know what they need to bring back? And I don't know if they ever will because of the ownership, but they should bring back doubleheaders on some of the weekends.
Oh, my gosh,
give the players
yes.
more days off.
I would love a doubleheader.
Yeah.
But back in the day when you could stay for both games.
Right.
You know, and you didn't have to pay
it
extra.
Way. They wouldn't do it that way.
No.
They'd
you would have to leave and then come back.
Yeah.
Right. Well, they had already been doing that.
Yeah.
And the last time they had doubleheaders, you could only buy one game, and then you had to leave.
Yeah.
But, oh, man, I love doubleheaders.
I would think the players would, too. I know it's probably tough on the bullpen and things like that, but if they got an extra day off a month and had one weekend where there was a doubleheader, I bet all the players would be like, yep, let's do that.
Probably.
We're all warmed up. We're here anyways. We can play a little bit.
And if a manager is worth their salt, they'll deal with that with their pitching staff.
You know, there's been so much talk this year about that the DH is finally going to come to the National League.
Yeah.
How will you feel about that if that does happen?
Things change. That's one thing where as much as it would gnaw at me, because you always look forward to that when you get American League and National League. You know, you get that designated hitter, no designated hitter, and they switch back and forth. And I think it's kind of cool. Always have.
I agree. Like, a friend of mine was like, how can they have two different rules for the two different leagues? It makes no sense. No other major sport would ever have that, yada, yada. And I understand that. But to me, it's just tradition. It's how it's always been.
Right.
And I'm cool with that, or at least since the 60s when the American League went ahead and instituted it.
Exactly. So I grew up with pitchers batting in both leagues.
Yeah.
You had to.
Well, think about it. Babe Ruth maybe would have never been the hitter he was if they had relegated him to just pitcher, right?
Exactly. Yes.
And I just love If it was going to change, I would want it abolished in the American League. I will be very upset if we go all designated hitter.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, who wants to see the pitchers hit? Well, I want to see the pitchers hit because they have to bunt or the manager has to make a decision.
Right.
Do I keep this guy in or is this? And there's so much more of a chess game in the National League because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand, oh, we want to see more, you know, hits. We want to blow. No. I want to see, you know what? You're out there. You know what? Granted, the quarterback doesn't throw a lot of blocks, but he's still out there, and he can still, you know,
right.
be part of the game. I think you play both sides of the game. It's how it should be. You shouldn't just be specialized, just, oh, I just pitch, I don't hit, whatever. It's great when a reliever suddenly has to bat for the first time in 10 years if he wants to stay in the game and things like that. They should get rid of the designated hitter. Let each team move the rosters to 26. Give every team one extra player. So all these guys that would lose their jobs then because they're fat and old and all they can do is hit, let them be pinch hitters and right. stay on the team, but sure. get rid of the designated hitter. And they're yeah. like, oh, we're spending too much money on these pitchers. We can't risk the injury, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, oh, they're blowing on. Their arms out throwing pitches, not hitting the ball.
That's why you're not getting pitchers who are getting the number of wins that pitchers back in the day used to get.
Well,
they would go on 3 days rest. They'd throw nine innings straight, and they wouldn't have arm problems.
Well, A, they probably did have arm problems, but they wouldn't talk about it because they needed the paycheck.
Yeah.
B,
well, they weren't
they
making
also,
that much money.
They also weren't throwing 98 miles an hour in these crazy sliders. They weren't putting the torque on their arms like these
true.
Guys are now.
But they were still striking people out and getting people out.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I mean, it
was what it was.
Yeah. Well, I'm old.
It's not the same now.
I'm old.
But I'd love to see them just get rid of the designated hitter altogether. I'm sure they never will. Which is disappointing, but
well, of course not. They're talking about changing it for the National.
But I hope they at least keep it out. And you know, my friend's like, well, it would benefit the Cubs right now, and it would be nice to have Kyle Schwarber just be a designated hitter. But I don't want to see it. I'd rather see him flopping around in the outfield, struggling. He's gotten a lot better. He's gotten a lot better in the outfield.
Yeah, and I still don't think that he is the hitter that they were hoping he was going to be. I'm sorry.
I don't know.
I
think
do
he's
not
still,
think he is. He's got monumental moments, but he is not the regular hitter that I think they thought he was going to be.
We'll see. I think he's still developing.
Well, oh, come on.
I think he is. He's only been in the league a couple of years.
Yeah.
And he missed a whole season with
true.
An injury.
He did.
And then came back and helped them in the World Series.
Yeah. True.
We'll see. It'll be interesting to see how the Cubs. I mean, you know, while the Cubs didn't make any signings, they did. If he stays healthy, they're getting Yu Darvish back, which is basically like you just signed the top free agent pitcher.
Right.
You know, it happened last year, but we just delayed it a year.
Right.
Took
right.
a red shirt season.
Mm-hmm.
Just cashed the $20 million.
Yeah.
But, you know, somebody is predicting. I saw the headlines, and I don't know if this is just clickbait or what. I can understand saying, well, the Brewers might finish ahead of them or the Cardinals might finish ahead of them,
mm-hmm.
but the Cubs are really going to finish behind the Pirates or the Reds?
Yeah, that's what I saw,
too. It's not going to happen. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know.
Ow. They're not going to fall apart that bad unless they are just decimated with injuries. Nothing on paper should tell you that the Pirates or Reds will finish ahead of the Cubs. Still have a great lineup. Still have some pretty good pitching. I know the bullpen.
I don't know. The bullpen is still very questionable.
Yeah, but if Yu Darvish is healthy, if John Lester is healthy,
well, we'll see how long he sticks healthy.
All right, Doubting Thomas.
Well, you know me. I am, especially when it comes to a season that's 100 and how many games? 168 games. 100 and what?
162.
162 games. It ain't over until it's over. But until it's over, I'm going to be grumpy.
Well, it's going to be a long summer with Roger.
Yeah, always is.
708 says, been a Cubs fan since 62. They've been on WGN TV forever. Now a couple good years, and they're going to pay TV. I've been loyal through all those crap teams, and now they're going to stick it to us. Yes, that's what they're going to do. Starting their own regional sports network, the Marquee Sports Network, which I think is a weird title.
By the way, yeah, because you know what the initials are. MSN.
Like same as Madison Square Garden Network?
No, that's MSG.
Oh, that's right. So what's MSN?
MSN. It's like MSNBC.
Yeah. I don't know if anybody's going to...
Well,
equate it with that.
That was the first thing that went through my mind.
Certainly not with Sinclair. Nobody's going to be equating it to MSNBC. Yeah. Polar opposite ends there.
That's true.
But you know, every Cubs game is going to be on this network next year.
Yeah.
So no WGN TV, no WLS TV, no free games at all. So if you're an over-the-air subscriber or, you know, don't get cable, my mom just gets very basic cable. So, you know, she misses all those games. She's not going to get a Cubs game next year.
Only if it's on network TV.
Okay, so you'll still get the Saturday Fox games.
If they are scheduled for a Fox game or an NBC,
then they can't do
doesn't NBC have a night game during the week?
No. Wow, Raj. A night baseball game?
I thought they did a night baseball game during the week.
That was like in the 70s.
Okay, my bad. Hey.
Because they did have Monday night baseball for a while, right? After football took off. And I think when I was a kid, there was still a game of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And now Fox has the noon games on Saturdays. But I think that is all you see on broadcast television.
Maybe that. I think that's all we're getting then.
Yeah. That's a shame.
It is. You know, because it takes it away, unless you got parents that are going to pay for it, it takes it away from the kids, which is your future audience, you know, your future money spenders who are going to pay for a ticket, and they grow up without seeing it on free TV.
Well, that is a thing that I think the Cubs are being short-sighted with, because they were bad for a very long time, but WGN TV, Harry Carey, the Superstation, you know, made it a whole Cubs region. People taking buses in from Iowa to go to Wrigley Field, all those things are because people grew up getting to watch them, getting to see them, wanting to be part of that. And now if you're going to make it so elite, it's going to be tougher. And what's going to happen is when the Cubs struggle again, which might not be that far off, right? I mean, they've had a bunch of really good a better run than the history of the Cubs suggests they have ever had.
True.
Making the playoffs multiple times, winning a World Series championship. The sustained success has really been part of the last 5 years or so. But eventually, they're going to hit tough times and have to rebuild again. They're pricing themselves so far out of the market with the expense that they can justify because of the demand, because of the good team. But when they struggle again, and teams are very hesitant to lower prices ever, so you don't see the Cubs coming down in price.
No.
They're going to have trouble filling up that stadium sooner than they think.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be a real problem when the games aren't on free TV at all. There's no free generation of new fans.
Look at what happened with the Blackhawks when they took them off of Channel 9.
Yeah.
And put them onto a cable network. I mean, audience fell at the Hawks games. They lost money.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. The best thing the Hawks did was Rocky Wirtz opening it up and saying, let's get them on TV.
I'm old enough to remember watching them on Channel 9. Lloyd Pettit doing the play-by-play. It was exciting.
Yep, and I'm young enough that when I grew up, you never saw a Blackhawk home game on TV.
There you go.
And the only time you did was during the playoffs when they were on Sports Channel and things like that. 708 writes, will the Cubs have to change the line in their theme song where it says you can catch it all on WGN? Well, of course, that was originally written for radio. That was our jingle for the 1984 season written by Steve Goodman. It still makes sense for them to play, even though they're not on with us anymore, because they are on WGN TV. But starting next year, will they just edit the song and not play that part? Will they not stop using that song? That's a good question.
I wonder how much they're paying for that. They play it every win. Every time they win at home, they play it in the stadium. They got to pay rights for it.
And probably some licensing fee. They probably just pay whatever the standard fee is. Or maybe they've cut a deal with the state of Mr. Goodman. I don't know.
Yeah.
But you do wonder, will they still play over the speakers? You can catch it all on WGN like they do now.
I don't know.
Because it won't make sense no more.
Yeah, yeah.
312-981-7200. Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN. Do you know the name Catherine Hellman, Roger?
Yes, I do.
Star of Soap and Who's the Boss?
Right.
She was Mona on Who's the Boss. She was good
on Soap.
Was good on Soap.
Mm-hmm.
She reminds me of Betty White in her role on the Mary Tyler Moore Show. On Mary Tyler Moore, Betty was she Sue Ann Nivens?
Yep.
She was kind of, you know,
snarky.
Well, she was also a bit sexual.
Oh, very.
Very sexual.
Oh, yeah.
And that's how Katherine Hellman was on Who's the Boss, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But also on Soap, was she ditzy?
She was very ditzy on Soap.
Very ditzy on Soap. Okay.
But still very sexual.
Who's the Boss? She was the sexy grandmother.
Yeah.
And she was funny. She was very funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she passed away at the age of 89, so she lived a good long life.
And then Rollo passed away.
And who was who's
the day
Rollo?
Before? Rollo from brain freeze. Come on, Nick DiGilio's going to kill me. Sanford and Son. He was the friend of the son. Yeah, he was his friend who Sanford never liked. He always thought he was like a loser con man kind of person. Hmm. You don't remember Rollo?
I don't remember him on that show.
Oh, my God. He was the son's friend on the show.
Hmm. I guess I didn't watch it that close.
I guess you didn't.
I've seen a decent amount of episodes, but I don't remember him.
I mean, it wasn't on every show, on every episode, and he wasn't in every season. But he was on enough of them where he could be considered a fairly regular cast member.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to describe him, but he always had an idea. He always had some kind of idea, a plan of how to make some money or how to sell something. And Fred Sanford just never liked him. Yeah. He never trusted him. Yeah, Rollo.
All right, so real quick, Raj, do you have a 60-second here's what happened in North Korea for me?
Two leaders got together.
They weren't in North Korea. They were in Vietnam.
Vietnam, yeah.
For their second summit.
They got together. They talked a lot. They shook hands. They smiled for the camera. And then President Trump took his ball and went home.
And so he left early. He surprised them?
Yes, he surprised everyone. I'm reading reports now that North Korean Kim Jong-un and his people actually believed they were going to get an agreement at this meeting. Mm-hmm. And they were surprised. Maybe it is the art of the deal. Never know. Just kind of reeled him in just enough and then said, "Up, goodbye."
Well, I know that Dave and the guys were talking with Patty about this. Mm-hmm. As I was driving in, I was listening to him talk a little bit about it, that there was a lot of concern that what kind of deal was President Trump going to make, because he had stated that a full accounting of North Korea's nuclear arsenal was not going to be required for a deal. And there's a lot of concern that, you know, if we're going to make any deal, we have to have a full accounting. We have to know exactly what they do and do not have so that we can keep track of these things.
And after the first summit, apparently, because we don't have monitors on the ground, apparently from reports, they have not denuclearized as they had promised they would start doing, and in fact have added some nuclear capabilities.
Well, they also tore down some things. They did some things.
But they moved. Positive. They didn't just tear down.
Right.
They opened up other centers. They haven't gotten rid of anything.
Well, I think they would say, well, because we don't have an agreement yet. In principle, yes, we're going to do this, but
there was an agreement after the first one that they would start to reduce their nuclear capability to show good faith. And they have not.
I think they would say that they maybe have, though, right?
Well, depends who you talk to.
That they stopped producing whatever, they stopped doing certain things. But you know what wouldn't be easy? I mean, you knew President Trump wasn't going to be able to just easily pull off what no other president has been able to do. He's tried a different tact. He's engaging Kim Jong-un. He's praising him, much to the consternation of his own defense department.
Yep.
but also, you know, told him he said publicly believes President Kim that he had nothing to do with Otto Warmbier's death.
Yeah.
And now the family and all these supporters are very upset with President Trump about that. He's doing the same thing he did with Putin, saying, well, he said he didn't. I believe him.
Mm-hmm. But then he comes back the next day and says that he doesn't blame him explicitly, but he says that he holds them responsible.
Yeah.
So he doesn't say, well, yeah, he did it, but he holds them responsible.
He said, of course, I hold North Korea responsible for Otto's mistreatment and death.
Yeah.
But
that still falls short.
I think the family seems unhappy with
him. Oh, extremely.
For sure.
Yeah.
But I think that is part of President Trump's tactic, is he praises these leaders. He wants to make them feel special, mm-hmm. you know, and that's probably been part of the way he's gotten deals done his whole life is, you know, this is his negotiating tactic. I'll say good things about you. I'll keep saying good things about you until I know this is not going to work out. Then I'll turn on you in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to win him over. He's trying to get, you know, to get a better deal. And mm-hmm. to get them to put away the nukes. It as we've said all along, it's going to be very hard to get somebody to give up their nuclear weapons once they have them.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's you got. And once you give them up, you ain't getting them back.
They're negotiating from a position of power.
Yeah.
So.
And the only power that they have, so they can't fall back too easily on them. Okay. A little bit after 4:30 in the morning, let's check news headlines now. Here's Roger Badish. 4:35 in the morning. Got Orion Samuelson coming up at 5 a.m. That Led Zeppelin song just played right there, Roger. That is called
Black Dog.
Black Dog. That's what the company's named after.
It's one of my that song. Exercise routine songs.
Nice.
Seriously.
Good.
That and a bunch of other ones that just, those were the ones that I would turn on when I'd get done with the calisthenics and I'd get on the bike and I'd start riding for like 30 minutes and I hit like about the 23-minute mark and then I got Black Dog. I've got, and then I end with two from Prince.
Really?
Look at
you hippo.
Because they go back to back.
Okay.
I Would Die for You.
And Baby, I'm a Star.
And Baby, I'm a Star. And that's how I would end. I would start, you know, you just sit on the bike and you pedal and work up the sweat. I would be up on the pedals, not touching the seat.
Yeah.
And I...
Pump it away.
Oh, man. I'd be turning the resistance up, sweat dripping onto the floor, just running off of me. And then just... And I'd get done. The songs would end. The two Prince songs would end. And then I'd just slowly slow down. You'd have to. And then I would stretch my legs out, keeping both feet on the pedals and kind of putting one back and one forward. And leaning a certain way to stretch the calves and the other muscles on the legs, and then move the pedals back the other way, do the legs, you know, one in front and one in the back.
Sure.
And then I would step off. I got a towel over me, of course. I'm just dripping sweat, and then walk out into the front room, and Bridget would be sitting there reading her book or something, and she'd probably yell at me, stop sweating on the floor.
Yeah.
But that's what I would, 30 minutes on the bike, to where I was literally drenched. And
that's
those
good.
Would be the last three songs I would do.
Now, when was this? You still doing this?
When I weighed about 170. And I'm at 252 now.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
I'm serious.
Oh, Raj.
I know.
It's a long road back.
Yeah, very long. I've done it twice. I have not done it since the cancer.
Well, good for you for not having the pizza tonight.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not that the one slice of pizza was going to kill me.
Sure.
But, I mean, I had my my sweet and sour chicken with the chicken egg roll and some of the short fried rice. I'm full now. I'm waiting in between meals longer and trying to eat less and not snacking. But you know why I'm gaining the weight is because I'm not exercising.
Yeah.
That's the deal. I know exactly why I'm not exercising. I'm not using it as an excuse. If and when our son gets his own place, I will be back to riding the bike.
Well, good for you.
And I know I could be doing other stuff now without the bike.
Sure. We all could.
But I'm retired. That's my excuse, and I'm sticking to it.
I hear you. Well, it gets a little easier when it gets a little warmer. I can take the dog for the walks and stuff that.
And I used to do that with Rufus, but life goes on, buddy.
Time drags on, sir.
Yeah.
It's going to be nice, though, when we just get a little bit. Little, you know, warmer. What I look forward to? I look forward to seeing, so where my studio is right next to the Maggiano's that's downtown.
Oh.
And we've got a Potbelly's right there, and there's a lot of other outdoor stuff. And when they start putting out the chairs and the tables for the outdoor seating, then you know. It's going to be here soon.
Well, this is March, so I think in about 2 weeks, the golf course will open.
Oh, okay.
And it's 4 blocks from me. So it takes like 2 minutes to get over there.
Yeah. When do they start? You play in a league, right?
We play in a league, but I can go any day.
Right.
You know, you go in the morning. It costs like probably not even $5 at the beginning of the season.
Wow.
Which is cool. And I walk. You know, it's 9 holes.
Yeah.
And I still suck at it.
Sure.
But it's good exercise. It's good walking.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be, you know, dressed warm, so that will hinder the golf swing a bit, which is already hindered. I got enough issues. The heavy winter coat won't make any difference.
Yeah.
But golf will be going in about 2 weeks, I think.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah, so there's a little exercise. And I'm going to try to get out more often than just the one day a week, which was on Wednesday evenings is when the golf league was. So,
and you guys just play 9 holes, or do you play twice?
We just play the 9 holes because we start late.
Yeah.
And I think we start like 4, and there's a league in front of us and a league behind us. So we got to hustle.
Okay.
And then we get done, and, early spring, late fall, it's dark by the time we're on the 9th hole. You know, it takes about 2 hours. So it starts getting dark, and that's as long as we still golf outside of the league, you know, before it starts up in the spring. I think it'll start like April, late April, maybe.
That's around the corner.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I did notice this week is it is getting light out a lot earlier and staying light a lot later.
Yep.
You know, past 5 o'clock now, it's light out.
And yep, definitely.
A week or so ago, I wasn't seeing that, I feel like.
Yeah, and I like that.
And then we're changing the clocks next weekend, I think, already.
Is that already?
I think so.
They moved that up a couple of years ago, didn't they?
Yes.
Time change, spring.
It's a lot shorter of a season.
Clocks. 2019, Sunday, March 10th,
next week
at 2 a.m., we spring forward. Put that on your calendar.
I will.
Even though your phone will, you know, change on its own.
My phone tells me.
But, so we move the clocks ahead 1 hour.
An hour of sleep.
Sunday, March 10th. And I always do it the night before.
Mm-hmm.
I'll always set them ahead the night before because I'll be working. So that way, when I get home, I'm on the new time, and I'm okay.
Right. So we'll just have. So that's interesting. I've never been on the air during that. So in the
clocks
fall,
just go.
Plyer gets an extra hour, but here he'll have just a 3-hour show.
No, we don't get an extra hour. We lose an hour.
Now we do. I said in the fall.
Oh, in the fall, he gets an extra.
Plyer
hour.
Gets an extra hour of his show, but here he'll lose an hour.
Right.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So you go from 1:59 to the 3 a.m. news.
Right. But it doesn't change at 1:59. It's like...
Well, it changes at 2.
It'll hit 2 and go for a couple of seconds, and then all of a sudden... Vroom,
all our clocks just change back.
Yeah, everything moves to 3. Yeah. It takes a couple of seconds.
But what does Dave say here with the 3 a.m. newscast? Or is he here with the 2 a.m.
news? He'll say, here's Roger with the 3 o'clock news. Or here's Roger with the news.
It's like you're peeking into the future.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. So you can take bets on my news at 2 or at 1 and then say, here's what the future's going to be in an hour.
If you're really desperate for some gambling opportunities, bet on Rogers news in the future.
The news? Oh, that reminds me of the bit. Do you remember Ronan Martin's laughing? You
vaguely, don't. Sure. Right.
So they used to do news of the future,
mm-hmm.
and it was hilarious. They would, if you get a chance to watch some of the clips on online, maybe or whatever, find the news of the future. They would, of course, a lot of it is like outdated now.
Sure,
I'm like sure. It just doesn't make sense. But some of it is funny. It's like you know, they talk about Premier Nixon will be. Or the world king Nixon, or whatever, things like that,
mm-hmm.
and it was funny. It was a funny bit, but they would sit down at like regular news people sitting at the desk, like Huntley and Brinkley, and give the news reports of the future.
Hmm.
20 years from now, it was cute.
They have anything right? Do you think, or was it all just goofy?
It was meant to be goofy and very political. Even though they did do some, like, social trends, like, you know, mini skirts or, you know, like fashions or sports and things like that. But they would do a lot of the political stuff, especially since the Vietnam War was going on at the time. And so they would do a lot of war-related stuff. As some of the stuff would hold up today, but some of it wouldn't. And especially if you're not of that time, you would look at it and go, what the heck are they talking about? You know, so. But yeah, if you get a chance when you got nothing else to do in your life, pull up an episode or two and see if they got that bit on there.
Rowan and Martin's laughing. Is that what Goldie Hawn was on?
Yep.
Okay.
That's where she got her big start. Yeah. It was good for the first couple of years, and then some of the kind of the same thing happened to them as happened on Saturday Night Live to the original cast, where some of them kind of got thinking they were hot stuff,
yeah,
right. And after a year or two, they kind of left, making their way to Hollywood, thinking they were going to make it big. And that happened on Ronan Martin's Laugh-In. Some of the first comedians that were on after a couple of years said, I can do better than this,
right.
And they went off, and the show just wasn't the same, but they never made it big.
Mm.
So, you know, it went after about the third year, it kind of got boring.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to stick with what you got.
Yep.
312-981-7200. We're going to check in with Orion here in a little bit on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. We got about 10 minutes left. We got Orion Samuelson checking in just a couple of minutes. Hey, for all of you out there who are thinking, boy, Matt, the show's almost over. What am I going to do with the rest of my week? I don't know where to turn from here. I've got an idea for you.
Uh-oh.
I've got...
Is it legal?
Yes. Yes. Got an article for you to read, Raj.
Oh, okay. I like reading articles.
This is in the journal Amphibian and Reptile Conservation.
Boy, I got that sitting right next to my chair. I didn't know it was in there.
The article is titled Ecological Interactions Between Arthropods and Small Vertebrates in a Lowland Amazon Rainforest.
I knew that.
It's a headline-grabbing title.
Someone's dissertation.
It documents 15 cases of arthropods, mainly large spiders and centipedes, preying on vertebrae like small frogs, snakes, and lizards.
Mm-hmm. Wait, does this go with the picture or the video that I saw?
The video of the ginormous-ass spider eating an opossum?
Yes, as big as a dinner plate. That's what the guy described the spider as. As big as a dinner plate.
This will give you nightmares for
God knows how long. There's video of it.
Yeah, I'm trying to pull up the video right now.
Oh, my God. They're walking around in the dark.
They hear some scratching. Like, what's that? It's students who were out studying this at the time.
From American universities. They do this a lot. And it's a... First of all, I'm thinking, it can't be. There aren't possums in the Amazon. Apparently, there are.
Yeah.
And this huge... If you have seen Harry Potter, I think it's the second episode, the second movie, where he has to go talk to the head spider in the forest, and the thousands of family spiders are chasing them and didn't think this was real, that it was just a movie, watch this video.
I'm watching it right now. It's a huge tarantula. If you think about a tarantula the size as one of your dinner plates,
mm-hmm.
and he is just dragging this opossum, who they say when they first saw it was still twitching.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yep. Scary. You think they grow them big down in Texas?
God, could you imagine?
Are you seeing it? They showed it a couple
of
times?
Yes, I'm seeing him drag this thing off now behind a tree.
Yeah.
They say most tarantulas are no bigger than a dinner spoon. The spider's body was bigger than a baseball. The opossum was about the size of a softball. Oh, God.
Big, long legs.
Oh, yeah.
High up.
It's just a nightmare scenario. Yeah. I mean, if this thing just came out in your house, mm-hmm. you wouldn't smash it. You'd flee the house.
Oh, yeah.
I think you'd be too scared to try to kill this thing.
Oh, of course you'd be too scared. Oh. You would run screaming if you didn't. Yeah, I have a heart attack first.
I saw online this week a little video, and I don't know where it was from. Somewhere, you know, big rainforesty mm-hmm. area. And it was I'm assuming a boa constrictor wrapped around a big dog.
Yeah,
a big dog.
You saw that too?
And then the guys with the sticks that are trying to pull it off. And they did.
And then it just took off.
Well, yeah, the snake eventually takes off, but once they get this thing unraveled, and it took them forever, the dog is trying to hop away,
right.
but the snake still has, probably has its teeth in it,
yeah.
and is holding on,
wrapped
and
all the way around it,
beating the spider with a stick until he lets this poor dog go, and the dog takes off, and I couldn't believe the dog was still alive.
It walked away.
This thing had a grip on that dog for a good 6 minutes. You're watching them try to pry the thing loose. You would have thought the dog would suffocate.
Right.
Dog survives. This snake ended up being, what, 20 feet long?
Easily.
It was insane.
Easily.
Insane.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I can't imagine going through that, and I can't imagine seeing this spider.
I can't imagine that they went after the snake and to
Very
try to
nice
get it
of
on.
Them to try to help out that dog, because I'm sorry. I'd see that dog and go, man, I'm sorry, dog.
Yeah.
That's a shame. That's a shame, but there's nothing I can do for you here, buddy. Sir, that is called the circle of life. Hakuna Matata, and good luck to you. I'm going to be going this away because I'm worried Mr. Snake will still be hungry after he swallows you whole. I'm not going to take a chance on that. Oh, that looked crazy.
That was.
And then you got to love the people that are native to the land. Like, no, we got a stick here. We'll get him off. It's fine.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
We'll just mess with this snake.
Not like they had a machete or anything.
Yeah. He just is killing a dog who you would think would be fast enough to get away from a snake, but no, he's got him. So we'll just pry him loose. They're grabbing the tail, yanking on him, trying to distract him.
Yeah, that was the other thing. The guy gets the tail.
Yeah, and he's holding on to it.
He's holding
on. Dude, what are you doing? Don't get Mr. Snakey Snake all mad.
Oh, my goodness. I saw that a couple of days ago. And I'm like, shivering. And then I saw the snake. I think it was yesterday I saw that video. And I had to watch it a couple of times because it takes a while, because it's dark.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to see it.
Students from the University of Michigan, by the way, who accounted this. And I wonder if all those kids were like, this is not what I signed up for this trip.
Well, the rest of the video is them talking on camera back at the university about what they do and how, you know, what they've found and what they're studying and all that stuff. So, yeah, it's a longer video. And then they show, like, the frog, the little frog that they find down in the rainforest.
Yeah.
It was kind of cool. But, no, I don't want to go down there for a trip. Nope. Nope.
I don't blame you.
I'll stay up here and deal with the little spiders hanging from the... yeah. I bet they don't have spiders that big down on the farm.
I wouldn't think so. Why don't we take a quick break? We'll see if Mr. Orion Samuelson is connected. We'll say hello to him next. Matt Bubala with you here on 720 WGN. All doing all right. Thanks for hanging out with us for another weekend. We will be back next late Friday night, early Saturday morning. You can stay with us on social media during the week. The Matt Bubala Show on Facebook, at Matt Bubala on Twitter, and at Matt Bubala on Instagram. It's time now to say good morning to Orion Samuelson. Hey, Big O.
Well, good morning. How many addresses do you have, for heaven's sakes? How many different places can I see you?
I just got those three, Orion. How many are you on? Are you on the Snapchat now, or are you doing Tinder mostly?
No, I'm on chalk and a blackboard. That's what I grew up with in the one-room, eight-grade country school in Wisconsin. Chalk and a blackboard, and if I behaved myself during the day, teacher would let me erase the blackboards at the end of the school day.
There you go. Or Roger and I are thinking of starting smoke signals next week. We think that'll catch up.
I think it will, too, but if it gets windy, they'll quickly blow away.
Well, that's true, but that's how we reach the people in Indiana. On TuneIn, thanks so much for hanging out with us this weekend, everybody. As I said, we'll be back at 1 a.m. next Saturday morning here on WGN Radio.